Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's AEW Dynamite on TNT.
Well, Eric, if WWE is really intent on getting Becky over as a heel, if Becky really wants to get over as a heel, I guess you could do like a reality show about her pregnancy. Maybe that would have helped, because my God, has the crowd turned on Cody Rhodes. It's not just a one city thing. Orlando, all over that, from the opening note of Cody's preposterously over the top ring entrance to every time he made a comeback and got fired up. And this is not what Cody wants, it doesn't sound like. It sounds like he's still trying to, stick to the idea of him maybe being a babyface. What's your take on what the heck's going on with Cody? I didn't see this coming, even though I'm watching him and going, well, I'm not super surprised when I look at the crowd and I look at Cody and everything he's done, but I also just didn't see it coming.
I mean, we've seen against Malakai Black throughout this whole thing, Black has gotten more cheers than Cody. And so the question that I have going forward is, will fans cheer Cody again if he's just not wrestling Malakai Black, who they like because he's cool as hell, he's got a bunch of tattoos, works a different style, getting his shot when he didn't really get it before in WWE. And so, but man, it was brutal. And the announcers just no-sold it, completely no-sold that Cody was getting booed throughout. WWE, as much as it drives me crazy, there's a reason they do the sound sweetening, and boy, tonight would have been a good time for Tony Khan to break that out, just because that main event was an overbooked mess.
Yes, that's another issue. I don't think it's just Malakai Black. I mean, I think he's an accelerant to the fans turning on Cody, but I don't know how many heels Cody would be being booed against being cheered against right now. Because AW kind of has some cool heels. I mean, I probably not MJF. Maybe that's what Cody should try next. I'm unsure. But my speculation would be part of it is he just kind of was in the Codyverse for a while. You know, doing game shows and reality. And then, you know, there's the Brandy factor. And you know, the Bellwether fans who kind of set the tone for things. You know, they're the ones giving Brandy a hard time and sending her off, you know, in a huff on Twitter because Brandy's being Brandy. And so that adds to it. And then there's just these new signings. And I think people like Cody, thanks for starting this company. We loved you, but we like these other people more. I just think there's a lot at play, but him being sort of an absentee EVP top tier guy who wasn't putting in the work when everybody else was, I think at least that's a perception. I think that laid the groundwork. And then you just have sort of Cody being a little unself-aware and oblivious about how grandiose and over the top he is about almost everything he does. And it always seemed like to me there was something teetering that could, you know, this Jenga tower of popularity Cody had to me sort of felt vulnerable. And I think it's showing that it is. It's interesting. It's not bad for AEW. I mean, it might hurt Cody's ego a little bit. Hopefully not, because I think he's going to be a fantastic and effective heel, especially if Brandy's with him, Eric.
He's clearly on record as saying he doesn't want to turn heel. He's the guy who does a lot of the charity work for the promotion, and it's hard to be the, you know, if you're a babyface and you're going out and doing charitable work, it works a lot better than if you're the heel on camera and then you're trying to, you know, visit a sick kid in a hospital.
You, by the way, Eric, real quick, you missed all the years where that was the excuse not to turn WWE into a red-hot territory by turning John Cena heel. Oh, but the Make-A-Wish and the charity work. Like, that was like a go-to excuse, too, for not turning Cena.
I mean, I think I've heard Cody maybe even say that he doesn't want to be a heel because of his daughter. Well, let me tell you, as somebody with a couple of kids, the first 2 or 3 years, maybe 4 years of their life, you know, they're not really that hip to what's going on national television. So probably if you're going to be a heel, now's the time to do it. Get it out of the way since the fans are forcing it anyway. And then you can have a babyface run when your children are old enough to maybe catch some of your show on TV.
And they're not going to remember these years either. It's sad, but the first few years of every kid's life, it's important for raising them. I mean, you got to, you know, feed them well and treat them well and, you know, show them love, but they're not going to remember it. They're going to be who they are when they turn, you know, 4, 5, 6 because of the things you do in those first few years, but don't expect them to recall much of it. So, I think they'll be just fine if he turns heel. And by the way, you can smarten them up to the business, you know, pretty early, as they say, and let them know, you know, it's just for fun. And see this nice crib and these nice toys. That's because I went on a hot heel run and made a lot of money. Yeah, it's quite the scene. I will say one of the issues I have, though, is from a credibility of the company standpoint and the goodwill with fans, I don't know how much longer the announcers can ignore that this is happening. Because I think one of the issues that people have with WWE is they feel that the announcers aren't on their side as fans. They're on the side of feeding propaganda to them as dictated by Vince McMahon. And if it seems like the announcers are now, you know, running from the reality and pretending it's not happening, I mean, I think fans are going to – I mean, AEW should protect their brand more than they should work hard to protect Cody's ego. I'll put it that way.
Yeah, I think AEW fans – almost always react how they're supposed to, right? I mean, it's you get Roman Reigns saying the reason they're so over is because the crowd babies them. Well, that's because they're putting on a good product. And so there was such cognitive dissonance because This is supposed to be the culmination of a big story where Cody, the all-American babyface, is coming back to vanquish the bad, evil Malakai Black villain. And they're doing everything they're supposed to do, right, in the match. I mean, they're
for an overwrought, overbooked match, yes.
Yeah. The Battle of the Ring Entrances match is what I dubbed it. That's but funny. You know, and then at the end, it's the fans are reacting to the exact opposite of how they're supposed to, and nobody's selling this. The announcers aren't. Cody's not. But the go home shot is they just piped that music in as loud as they could because I assume the fans were booing like crazy, right? But they had Cody's theme song. Drowning it out, the great cognitive dissonance that was caused tonight has to be a wake-up call to Cody and Tony Khan. It's like, I mean, maybe you get – if you're Tony Khan and you really like Cody and he's one of the guys who helped found the company, maybe you get – okay, Cody, you get one more shot to get over as a babyface and then we got to turn you heel if this doesn't work. And in the short term, it looks like they're setting up a tag team match for the pay-per-view of – Cody and Pac versus Malakai Black and Andrade, which, okay, fine, I guess. But that's just delaying the inevitable, I think, for a Cody heel turn. They're going to have that come to Jesus talk in the locker room or the office and sort this out.
Yeah, does it help or hurt that Cody got his redemption tonight? He pinned Malakai Black. I think it hurts. I mean, now if you're getting booed and the company is trying to like pretend it's not happening in front of our very eyes and ears, and then you win against a guy who's really popular and that's supposed to be, you know, Shivani says he gets his redemption. I mean, I think it actually just, it's not like the wrong booking move. It's just facts are facts. I think that hurts Cody. Now he's putting himself over somebody who fans like more than him and they see him as that. And that's one of the dangers of billing him in the confines of the show as an EVP.
Yeah. AEW has not really faced this before. I mean, if they did, I don't recall, and it's certainly not in this major of a way. And so one of their big selling points is we give the fans what they want. Well, what the fans want is not Cody as a babyface. So what are you going to do?
Well, what we're going to do is introduce the show. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Saturday, October 23rd, 2021. And I'm Wade Keller, the host of the program, the host of the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Shows following Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night, barring preemptions of wrestling shows, in which case we move to a new night like tonight for the last Saturday Dynamite for a while here. And I am also the founder and editor and publisher of the Pro Wrestling Torch Weekly Newsletter and the website PeteWTorch.com. I also host a bunch of VIP podcasts just for our favorite people in the world, the VIP members who support us. through their PW Torch VIP membership, including the Daily Wade Keller Hotline. And by the way, tonight I'll have a lot more on that Charlotte Becky Lynch backstage argument and incident, and put that in context. If you've been listening to me carefully on these shows recently, you will know that I've been foreshadowing eventually the reporting out there catching up to the reality that Charlotte is not at all well-liked among her peers behind the scenes and is a growing problem. I will get more into that in the Wade Keller Hotline tonight for VIP members with some kind of semi-blow-by-blow details of what went down in the reaction to it in the locker room. And I'll also be reviewing Dynamite start to finish in case you missed the show and you came here for analysis, but you want to catch up on the full details of the show, because I know a lot of you have plans on Saturday nights and might not have had a chance to see it. So besides Wade Keller Hotline, I also host The Fix with Todd Martin and Everything with Rich Fan and post pay-per-view roundtables, which we've been doing since 2003, following WWE, TNA, Summer Ring of Honor, and now AEW pay-per-views also. The other voice you hear is Eric Kroll, a former Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter columnist and now a frequent contributor to PW Torch daily cast post shows and some VIP shows. Eric, welcome back to the co-host chair. I appreciate you filling in. We had late substitution mostly due to my poor planning, but just a likely host who then ended up not making it, and I just didn't confirm he couldn't make it in time. So we scrambled, and you were like the 12th choice, only because you were on just 2 weeks ago, and I like to spread people out at least 3 weeks. But you are my first choice, of course, always, Eric. Welcome.
Well, thank you, Wade, for having me and that really, really bad intro. I am so old. How old am I? I am so old that apparently I used to fax my columns into the Torch back in the day because email hadn't been invented yet.
That is true. All right, but I don't like to publicize that because then that can lead to a whole chain of events when we're live here taking calls. So, Eric, thank you. We have a decent amount to talk about on tonight's show. I know they don't put everything out there on Saturdays, but I thought this was a newsworthy show. I do hope Lance Archer's okay. That was scary, Eric.
Yeah, I think if I'm AEW, I get it. Lance Archer wants to go in and finish the match and just go to the finish. They should have just stopped the match and awarded it to Eddie Kingston. I'm guessing that was the finish anyway, because Kingston Archer was on offense most of the match, so that I assumed Kingston was going over. I don't think it really matters, because whoever was going over is losing to Bryan Danielson in the semifinals. And we saw in New Japan, Kota Ibushi landed wrong on a Phoenix splash and dislocated his shoulder, and they stopped the match, right? It was an anticlimactic ending to a big tournament. It was scary that Lance Archer came in and then there was a roll up. It reminded me of Steve Austin and Owen Hart when that happened. Obviously lower stakes, but what did you think? Should they have just stopped it right there?
Oh, yeah. I really do. I mean, the fact is Archer on his own rolled to the floor. And then the doc checked on him, and Archer on his own rolled back into the ring for the roll-up. Absolutely, it had flashbacks to Austin and Owen. The match just wasn't high stakes enough where you – and if you want Kingston to advance in the tournament, just call it off. Lance Archer's unable to continue. I actually think that protects him more than having him get rolled up, although neither matters that much. I think everyone is just – it breaks the suspension of disbelief, the immersion and the illusion of the competition when somebody – has that kind of landing, not only from a concussive impact on his skull, but the impact that reverberates on a neck when you hit at that angle with that kind of body weight behind him. Nobody is concerned at all if they just call off the match. That's fine. And, he'll be fine. If he's physically fine, his character will be fine coming back. Stuff happens. I'm not sure he needs to be doing that move, by the way, but that's a whole other thing. I sometimes, because you can doesn't mean you should. And I don't know how much at this point there's a novelty of seeing, back when Bam Bam Bigelow could do it, it was like, whoa, no one his size has ever done it. But just wrestle your body type. And he's got so much going for him. He doesn't need to be, showing off with that kind of stuff. But accidents happen. And they happen to people who are doing moves in their normal moveset who are smaller than him. But that was rough looking. So to circle back, just to be clear, I don't have a huge problem because it was Archer initiating everything. but I have a problem trusting somebody who hits their head that badly to make prudent decisions about their health, especially if they're worried about looking bad on TV or letting someone down or their ego. And that's why ultimately, if I'm Tony Khan, I'm on the headset saying, call off this match now. I do not take chances. You can't fall back on, well, Lance Archer said it was okay, even though I sort of was. The fact that he physically could roll out of the ring meant, you know, he wasn't paralyzed. You know, like, they're not moving somebody with an obviously broken neck, and he was on his own moving. But I still say override that right then and there and make that the policy. It's just not worth it not to.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is the second time this has happened. Was it Sammy Guevara who was feuding with Matt Hardy?
Matt Hardy, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That Hardy fall looked, you know, even worse. And they have their excuses for why they did what they did. But just, you know, if disbelief, as you pointed out, if disbelief has already been broken anyway because of what happened and everybody's gasping, it's okay to just end the match because the roll-up doesn't really do anything to protect you at all.
Right. Yep. All right. Well, let's get to phone calls. We had a low caller quantity last Saturday night. We have a higher one tonight, including our on-site correspondent who is standing by. But first, we're going to continue to discuss the show and with a caller from the 513 area code. You are up first. 513, go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
Hey, Wade. Hey, Eric. My name is Micah, and I'm from Cincinnati, Ohio.
Hey, Micah. Thanks for calling. What'd you think of Dynamite? What stood out?
I loved the show. I'm with Eric. We went to Dynamite in Cincinnati back in September, and the crowd was so loud that you really couldn't hear the entrance music. I remember Malakai Black facing Dustin Rhodes, and there was just – it drowned it out so bad. The crowd drowned out the music so bad that we couldn't even hear, like, Malakai's entrance. So I'm just agreeing with Eric, saying, like, I'm surprised that you could, you know, hear Cody over that. So three quick questions I have for you guys. Can either ask them one at
sure.
a time or – okay. So, yeah, do you guys – a couple of weeks ago, Wade, you were talking about how Daniel Bryan – or Bryan Danielson, excuse me, could stay in the title picture. Do you guys think that he wins the Eliminator tournament?
Eric, what do you think, looking at the lay of the land, including what they've done so far in it?
I think he loses to Moxley. I guess for a couple reasons. One, Mox, you know, I'm assuming Paige wins in Minneapolis next month at the pay-per-view. I'm assuming that's what's going to happen. And so if that happens, you do not want to set up Hangman Paige to fail. Which is Bryan Danielson would be probably over pretty big as a face, and it's just the psychology would be off. It's just not the way to go. And the other thing is, when they were both up at the top of the ladder, Moxley was the last guy before, you know, with the chip hanging and the title shot at stake. Moxley was the last guy, so he has sort of a natural feud pending with Paige, assuming Paige wins. If Kenny Omega retains, then you're going right to Bryan Danielson and Kenny Omega in another match that's probably going to be on TV because the next pay-per-view is far away. I don't know. They're going back to it pretty quickly. So those are my thoughts. Wade, do you think Danielson's going to win the tournament?
I think you make a good point. I mean, I think I threw to you in part because I don't have a real strong sense of it. Who else is on the list of your possibilities, Eric?
I mean, you look at that bracket, and it's clearly either it's going to be a Danielson-Moxley finals, right? I mean,
yeah,
they're
that's
not
the
losing
thing. I mean,
to any of those guys, right? To any of those guys, so
yeah,
Moxley's not losing to 10, and then he's not losing to who would he face? Orange Cassidy in the semis, then on that side of the bracket, I think, because it's Eddie Kingston and Danielson on Dynamite next week. So it just, you know, it
yeah.
Seemed like everybody instantly went to that's obviously the finals because they didn't overload it with stars. They put guys like Ken and Dustin Rhodes who maybe don't necessarily belong in a title shot turn.
I think before tonight, Archer would have been, you know, especially if Hangman wins, might have been in the conversation. But to me, I just the way that Danielson can do so much in this playground right now. And if Hangman wins, for the reasons you said, I just don't think you want to go there and make the fans choose between the two of them. And Danielson has so many stories you can tell with him that people are going to be interested in that don't need a title. And Moxley, I mean, what'd you think of his promo tonight, Eric? Was that, I mean, if you're fighting for your daughter and you go from, I don't care about winning the tournament to the in the end, I'm going to win it for her. It was an interesting journey he took us on. And he does seem to have a little bit more of a feisty edge to him, but I don't know if that counts or as a heel turn. I don't know if they could turn him heel. Maybe he's excited by seeing Becky try to go against the grain of popularity. But maybe Moxley gives Hangman some hardcore edge, a little more grit if he's able to defend against him successfully. I don't know. Your thoughts on that?
I mean, my notes say not a heelish promo, right? I mean, he's talking about his daughter and looking in her eyes and she's grabbing his, comically mangled pinky.
Although some people think talking about your kid too much turns you heel. You know, I mean, like, you know, I don't care about anything but my kid. It's like, I mean, that's great in the real world, but in pro wrestling, that can get you in trouble sometimes.
Yeah. I mean, some of the promo, I assume, was too meta for you, Wade, because he talked about he doesn't care about ratings and Twitter and all of that, and I know you tend to hate that stuff.
No, it's all context, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's just – I don't like it when it – I don't want to get a whole sidebar, but, like, you can acknowledge that you don't care about any of the stuff going on around you, all the stuff that everyone, all his colleagues seem to be talking about in this war. That doesn't break kayfabe in any way. It doesn't take away from the immersiveness of him – like, I don't like when, you know, like, I just don't think it's, if it doesn't serve a purpose, don't do it, to reference, you know, catering over and over, which gets tired and cliche, you know, talking about wrestlers being EVPs, but not explaining a context to it. And there's more egregious examples out there. But, I mean, Moxley's brand is, you know, he's not on Twitter. He doesn't care about all this other stuff people are doing about it. It was part of him saying, you know, kind of sending the idea that everyone is backstage is buzzing about all these things. I just care about my daughter, and therefore I need to win to bring, you know, the money home and succeed for her. So I was okay with it in that context. I think it's a little more nuanced than binary for me when it comes to that kind of thing.
I think Mox's character, since he entered AEW at the Double or Nothing 2019 pay-per-view and the big surprise at the end, he attacked both Jericho and Omega. And he has his character has never been white meat babyface, right? I mean, he's always it really just depends on who he is in the ring against. And for the most part, in AEW, he's been in the ring against heels, and so he's the more sympathetic, likable guy. You don't, I guess you, it's not, doesn't need to be as radical of a personality shift, because Mox is positioned where he just needs to shade a little bit to the left or a little bit to the right, and he can be the subtle heel or you know, the tweener in a match.
Yeah. I'm a little worried about Hangman being against somebody who is not a full-fledged heel, and it's sort of like, pick him. Do you really want to put Hangman, if he wins the title, on that course?
Yeah, I mean, I was worried about that until I saw what the fans were doing as Hangman and Mox were the last two guys, and they didn't like Mox getting an offense on Hangman. They were booing that, and they were cheering Hangman when he was getting offense in on Moxley. And so I think if you were looking, if they are going the pulling the trigger on Paige as their champion, babyface champion, you know, how would you want to firmly establish him as a real force and an actual champion and not a fluke? Well, you put him over two of the biggest stars they have in the promotion, you know, from the get-go, which is Kenny Omega and Jon Moxley. That, you know, it would show you he's on the road to being a strong champion.
Yep. And that's the that's the positive side of it. All right, Mika, back to you.
Yeah, I agree. I think that, you know, you don't want to have a face-to-face matchup between Hangman and Daniel Bryan so quickly. I keep calling him Daniel Bryan, Bryan Danielson. But, you know, Dean Ambrose.
By the way, I've given permission to everybody in the world that if you get it wrong, you can correct it and move on, and no one's going to hold it against you because we're going to be doing that for years. Fine.
What did it again with Dean Ambrose? Because I watched the Broken Soul sessions with Seth Rollins this morning. So John Moxley. So John Moxley, you know, makes sense. You know, he's closest thing to a heel, I guess, in that tournament. That makes sense. I'm honestly surprised as we're talking about it, like Adam Cole isn't in that tournament. And, you know, what would it look like if Paige wins the title from Omega and then, you know, Adam Cole were to win the tournament and then go on to face Adam Page, because I would love to see that match. But going on to my second point, I would, if you guys were booking the show differently tonight, who would, like, would you have had Malachi go over? Because, like, it was clear as day that, you know, he should have, and they were, you know, the crowd was for him, you know, even though that he's, I guess, booked as the heel in this scenario. And I know you guys were talking about that at the top of the show, but, like, how would you guys have booked that differently?
Eric?
I wouldn't have made it such an overbooked mess. I mean, at one point, they're both outside – the Malachi and Cody are outside the ring. They're both blading or getting natural juice. I think in the case of Cody, he was blading, and in the case of Malachi, he may have had the natural juice. So there's double juice. Everything just kind of grinds to a halt, and the match kind of breaks down. Arn is in the ring for some reason. I don't know if he was too early on his cue, kind of wandering around with the Get the Glock obnoxious chance. The crowd tonight sucked. I did not like the crowd at all. Andrade comes wandering down like he's got all day. Arn gets the mist from Malachi Black. Then Pac comes down to brawl with Andrade, and this is just after Lee Johnson and Brock Anderson took a chair away from Malachi Black and left. So – good Lord in heaven. I mean, so how could you have booked it differently? I think, I mean, if you put Black over, you're burying Cody, and you would have had to have been prepared to turn Malachi Black face, right? I mean, and give the crowd what they want. I mean, it's not just that they want to boot Cody. It's also that they want, they're cheering Black. And so you would have
how do you do that?
I mean, you got to turn him Black face, but then you've got to turn Cody heel in the same match. I mean, I guess the fans already sort of turned Cody heel. You could have leaned into that, I suppose, but Cody doesn't want to be a heel. So
how Dusty Rhodes would it be, Eric, for Cody and Black to end up on the same side because some heel team, you know, jumps out and attacks them and they fight to mutual respect. And then, you know, some heel team comes out and beats up Cody and Black sitting at ringside runs in and saves Cody. And now they're Nikita and Dusty together at last.
Well, if they were to answer Micah's question, that's how you would have booked it differently tonight, I suppose, right?
Yeah.
It would have been Cody leeching off of the hot act or one of the hot acts in AEW's babyface heat, and that would have, I would have laughed because I'm old enough to remember Dusty doing it all the time in the 80s in the NWA. So there you go. There's your answer.
Yeah. And I think, you know, Cody – I think fans are picking up, perhaps consciously or subconsciously, on Cody using all the shortcuts. You know, like, just go have a freaking match. Look at what Bryan Danielson's doing. You know, just go and or CM Punk, just go have a match. Like, why do you need to bleed every time? Why do you need to have all the run-ins? Why do you have to have these convoluted storylines with Arn Anderson stumbling around the ring and falling off the ring apron? And it's just like, just go have a match. Keep it simpler. Strip it down. And so I don't think that's helping. I mean, I don't think alone would cause fans to turn on him, but I think there's a sense of it's just like, you know, one shortcut after another. It's just a bag of tricks is pulled out for him every time. And, you know, the bleeding is a little much, and I don't know, you know, save it for when it counts, not to try to make up for what you might be insecure about in terms of, as we see in, you know, Rose to the Top, Cody with his back issues and his pain and all that. If he just doesn't feel he can go, I think some of these shortcuts and distractions are hurting more than they're helping.
I mean, this is how Cody's booked his matches since day one of the promotion, right? I mean, it's just always been the case. All of the big matches are overbooked. I wondered why the buildup on this match is rushed, because they just did last week the promo where, you know, the skit where Cody is doing the Apollo Creed, helping train Rocky Balboa. And then, you know, you think you would need a couple of weeks to let that play out of Cody rebuilding himself, but they just rushed it. This, you know, I thought this could have been at the pay-per-view, and then I see what the reaction of the fans were tonight, and the light bulb went over my head. Oh, that's why they didn't save this for the pay-per-view.
Yes. You know, there's been comparison between Cody and Jeff Jarrett when he was running TNA, and, you know, there's, you know, debunking is too strong a word, but there's certainly differences between them. Todd Martin covered that, I believe, on a recent Fixed Mailbag on the VIP side of things several weeks back. But Jeff would always book overwrought finishes too, like just needlessly complex and convoluted series of run-ins and distractions and all that leading up to the finish. It just became kind of a joke too. And there's, you know, it adds to the ledger of Cody is more, you know, Jeff Jarrett, along with a sprinkle of Triple H, than, you know, he is what I think he hopes to envision himself as earning the reputation for being different than them. Micah, back to you. I know you had a third point.
Yeah, just last question. And do you guys think this loss hurts Malachi Black? I know this is his first loss since being in AEW. And once he gets, like, away from Cody, where does he go from there? And wanted to thank you guys for taking my call. Also, Wade, when you guys were at the top of the show and you were talking about the heat with Charlotte backstage, my wife was like, that's shocking. And I just laughed really, really loud. So thanks for taking my call. And,
appreciate it, Mike.
Appreciate
it. Yeah. What's that?
Just appreciate all you guys do, and thanks for taking my call.
Great, thanks. Appreciate it. Yep. Good call. Yeah, that crossed my mind, Eric, watching it as the ref counted three. I'm like, oh, man. I mean, it's Cody, and you want clean jobs, and I'm not a big fan of, like, everybody who comes in being undefeated. You know, they mentioned that with CM Punk earlier. It's like, you know, you don't have to be undefeated to be good. You know, in the NFL or NHL, you know what? You don't have to win everything to still have a shine on you. And sometimes a loss can, you know, propel you. It can be used to trigger some new intensity level. You know, I was kind of hoping for that with Drew McIntyre on SmackDown last night. Instead, they decided to ignore that Big E beat him and have him just, you know, show up as if nothing happened. And I'd rather have that be a story that gets integrated and weaved into the show. So you're rewarded for, you know, investing in the match and that the outcome matters. So for me, they have a chance to do that with Malachi Black here. You know, Malachi lost. And how does he react to that? That should be interesting, not something that makes you less interested in him. Eric.
So I'm trying to parse this in my head because the psychology is all messed up because Black is the heel, but he's being cheered as a babyface. And so were Black the heel? Were Black viewed by the fans as a heel? Well, strong heels take losses all the time, right? They lose the feud in the end because – generally speaking, in wrestling, really good booking is to have the top babyface go over the top heel. I mean, Rick Rude lost most of the feuds he was ever in, but he maintained his heat, right? And so, but Black is the face here. And so I'm trying to work out in my brain here live, does the loss not hurt Black because he is loved as a babyface, even if AEW isn't booking him that way? Does the loss not hurt him because of the weird reverse psychology that's going on and the sort of backwardness of the whole situation?
All right, let's go to our next call here. Looks like, I believe, Ashley in Virginia is up next. Ashley, is this you?
It is. Can you hear me?
Yeah, sure can. Thanks for calling. Good to hear from you again. What'd you think of Dynamite?
Hey, thank you. So I just a heads up, I'm actually in the parking deck leaving the show now, so if I cut out, I'm so sorry.
Oh, sure. So you attended? You attended tonight?
Yes, I did. I did. It was the first show here in Orlando. Yeah, I'm sorry. I caught the show a little bit late. I called into you guys a little bit later. But I think I just caught on to what you guys were just talking about Cody and Malachi Black, right? The main event.
Yeah.
Yeah. The fans. I mean, I'm sure it came across on TV, but man, everyone was just ready. And thinking, like, this was going to be, like, a double turn almost tonight. And I don't know how clearly they came across, but it got vulgar at times. Some sections were chanting, F.U. Cody, go back to TV, and just got a little crazy there for a second, not feeling like Orlando, like a Chicago or New York town, but it was something else. But I was calling to see what you guys thought about, yeah, where kind of Cody goes next and Malachi as well, just because if they didn't do the double turn tonight, which I personally didn't think they would, just because I figured they can, you know, drag this out more. But I don't. What do you guys think Cody goes from here? Does he, like, kind of take some time off? And does Malachi, like, end up turning face after all this? Because it was a pretty strong reaction for him tonight.
I think it's worth, if you're Tony Khan, reassessing one or both based on everything, but especially tonight in the crowd reaction. You know, like you said, Eric, you might maybe give Cody one more chance against a less popular heel. And you at least create, and I think it's an astute point, you know, it's fair. Hey, Cody, we match you against somebody who fans just really like, and maybe the booking wasn't the strongest in how we approached it. We'll give you one more chance, and you know whoever's next for him, we'll see. And I'm interested to see who that is. And if you have ideas, Eric, mention them. As far as Black goes, I mean, I think you ought to turn him babyface. I mean, like, Malakai Black against MJF, like, jumps out as money. Malakai Black against Ethan Page with Dan Lambert, or I don't know, even can rattle off a few other heels. Like, they've got some good choices where, you know, Malakai's that no-nonsense, kick-ass guy who just shuts up people who can't stop talking. So to me, there's some, like, real potential there. Eric, your thoughts?
So I think it's for Malakai Black, it's the flip side of Cody. You know, do you give Cody one more chance? I don't know who the heel would be he would wrestle. I was remembering Tony Khan's notebook that they caught at the Jaguars game, and Miro was one of the potential people to wrestle Cody. Well, that's not going to work because Miro generally gets cheered.
Yes.
I don't have a heel in mind that would be Cody Rhodes' stature, place on the card to go against. But
a lot of people are paired off, you know, like Adam Cole's being paired off with Sammy Guevara, and Ricky Stark's headed to CM Punk. Like, I just think, in a way, it's slim pickings for Cody if they want to, Malakai, if they want to change course and book him against the heel and turn him face, because they planned out everything for all their top heels, barring an injury. They'd have to reshuffle some things, and is it worth doing that as an audible if it costs something else that's already in motion?
Yeah, the path of least resistance with Cody is to turn and heel because you get a whole bunch of fresh matchups. Malakai Black, it's the same thing. So since he's been in AEW, I think he's only faced Cody Rhodes or Nightmare Family people. For the most part, Dante Martin, I think, was thrown in there. Does Malakai Black get cheered against a popular babyface? So if they go to Jungle Boy Malakai Black, Orange Cassidy Malakai Black, Malakai Black still get cheered, or does he get booed and it was just because of Cody? I mean, that's the factor you can't control for
right,
here.
Yeah.
And so before you turn Malakai Black face, take a deep breath and see how you don't have to have a big long program. Just put him in there against a face the fans like, your Darby Allins, your Jungle Boys, and see what kind of reaction he gets, and then go from there.
Ashley, anything else you want to bring up?
Just a quick question about Kenny Omega and Hangman. It was kind of a bummer we didn't get to see them like in person tonight, just on the screen, and we couldn't really make out the video package that Kenny had done with the Elite earlier in the show. What do you think about the build so far, at least on Kenny's side? It's just, to me, like, I was one of the fans who knew of Kenny Omega before AEW, but I had never seen, like, any shows or any matches from him. Excuse me. So I was really looking forward to kind of seeing, like, what Kenny Omega was about and just seeing, like, who he was, because obviously, like, I heard, like, he was one of the best in the world and all that. So, and I'm definitely a fan of his now, but it just kind of, in a way, doesn't seem like he's, like, the focal point of the show. And I don't know necessarily if that's, like, a good thing or a bad thing. I'm just kind of conflicted myself. I just kind of get your guys' opinion on that, and that was pretty much it. I appreciate your guys' time tonight, though.
Great. Thanks, Ashley. Glad you called. Eric, did you watch Billions on Showtime?
I did not.
Okay. I gave it a try, and I need to be talked into giving it more of a try, because some of the scripting – It's so hard because Succession is so good, and people are like, well, you're waiting for Succession, you know, season 3 to come out, you know, watch Billions, because that's, you know, if you like that, you'll like this, that kind of recommendation. And I don't think the cast is as good. I don't think the script writing is not even close. And what gets to me is just some of the lines just feel so unnatural in some of the, like, conference room scenes. And they were the type of insults that get just levied where someone is overwriting insults and then, like, women are laughing at jokes that no way in the real world would they laugh at, and they aren't that clever, and it just felt heavy-handed. And with Kenny tonight, it was sort of like the things he was saying kind of reminded me of what made me groan in, I think it was episode 2 of Billions, where I just sort of, like, was like, I don't know if I can really watch this, if it's going to be like this throughout. So, one, I'm asking people to talk me back into watching Billions and tell me it gets better, because Succession might have spoiled me in terms of acting and scripting and just overall, it just feels like a bigger budget, better version of what Billions is. Number two, I bring it up mostly because I think Kenny sometimes seems A billion seems a little lower rent to me than I want it to. And sometimes Kenny seems lower rent than I want him to. And I thought, like, because Ashley brings up, you know, should you build a show around him? And I watch Roman Reigns. There's nothing low rent about Roman. Last night on SmackDown, it was one of his best promos. He just owned that ring. He's walking around with his chin up and, like, just absolutely seems to have this joy of performance. He's found his stride. He's found his lane, and he's great at it. And the show was really built around him. You know, it was 35 minutes. The first 35 minutes was just Reigns in that segment reacting to what happened at Crown Jewel. And he carried it. And you know, and that's saying something. You got Heyman and Lesnar and others as part of that mix. Kenny, I just don't know if they could do that. So, one, philosophically, AEW is more – is Tony has built it more as an ensemble show. That's a philosophical decision he's made or accidentally fallen into. I think it's more deliberate. But I don't know if he has that person you could do that with. One, he has a deeper roster than SmackDown of people – of wrestlers people care about, top-tier guys. So it would be a harder choice to make with one – signature show. You're not splitting the roster in half, even with Rampage. And I just don't know if Kenny is the guy you can do that with. So all that said, I still think they should center whatever the shortcomings Kenny has, however much he has seemed kind of low rent at times compared to what I hoped for and what I think he could have been from the beginning, with just a little more effort with wardrobe, a little more effort with being guided and produced a little more high end by Tony and others. I still think you want to make your champion more centerpiece of the show and make that championship more of a storyline. And I sometimes he does seem like just another guy who happens to have the title throwing out some kind of, I think, low-rent insults at Hangman Page. Although I will say, as I compound this question more with even more layers here, so I hope you're taking notes, I thought there were some high points in the interview too. And I think the broad brushstroke of that promo was Hangman Page is insecure. And we know that, and I'm going to prove why he should be. I like that better than, you know, poopy diaper jokes. You know, like, that's the low rent stuff that I just love. Like, you know, settle yourself down and just say things without that kind of stuff. So, Eric, go ahead.
I mean, I think the two things. One, that promo was so short, it was a blip. I mean, there was, to your point, it was he was making his insults, and he had his one lane, big line was he got his lackeys, you know, the Bucks and Adam Cole to laugh at him and say, ha, good joke, boss, right? But the crux of this very short promo, it couldn't have even been a minute, was I'm going to beat Hangman because Hangman's insecure and I know he doesn't think he can win, right? I mean, so to me that was good because it was playing exactly into it logically followed Hangman's great promo from last week where Hangman kind of had his mission statement and now I do have the confidence I am going to beat you. And so I certainly feel like they got to heat this feud up a lot more than it currently is before they get to the pay-per-view and, you know, have a confrontation in the ring, beat down Hangman Page. But they've got three more Dynamites and three more Rampages to do that. So I'm confident they will put this on the front burner and get it done. As for your other points, I mean, Kenny's title reign, I thought, started out pretty strong with the shock heel turn and aligning himself with Don Callis, and there was some strong stuff at the start. And then he just, and then he was getting back through Moxley. And then there was this period where they had two pay-per-views in a row and plus a Jungle Boy feud in there where Kenny Omega was the champion, and he wasn't wrestling any of the top guys. And why is that? Well, the first time it was because Christian, they were going to go to Christian in May. He wasn't ready. He wasn't over. So they had to go to a three-way with Pac and Orange Cassidy. And then they went with Christian in September because Paige went home to be a dad. And so time-wise, that's the heart. That's sort of most of the actual time of Kenny Omega's reign. And so they didn't rush any other matches or any other challengers. And that's sort of what you're left with. And then, so if Kenny loses the belt next month, eventually are we going to, in a couple of years, get a Kenny Omega babyface run with the title? I don't know. I don't want to say redeem himself because it's not like he was a failure, but ratings are good and the pay-per-view buy rates are good. But yeah, it's weird to not be the star of your own show when you have the belt.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of mileage on that, on those tires. And Kenny is over because of what he did in New Japan rings. And if he can't keep up, and he's had, you know, there's an angle, you know, I don't know, 9 or 12 months ago where he could barely get out of the ring. You know, like, I mean, he was holding the ropes in a pain, and reminded me of Shawn Michaels when he was pushing through back stuff, back injury issues in the 90s. And I just, like, I just don't, I mean, I don't know. Maybe he'll be able to get himself back into great shape and he'll be durable enough and as a babyface be able to deliver. But, I mean, if he can't be the best bout machine, what is he? I mean, what else does he have going for him where you'd want to build around him other than a reputation among a sliver of the AW audience who could actually, you know, recall specifics of his New Japan run. You know, as AW grows and time passes, that's a smaller segment of the audience. If AW is doing their job, you want it to be a smaller slice who are watching him on New Japan streaming service. So, but I get that, like, the bad one-liners, you know, like, you can't sleep at night, you're burning through negative one's diaper supply faster than your homemade moonshine. Like, that's bad. That's bad writing. And maybe it was a feature, not a flaw, because the Bucks telling him how great he was is, like, that's what's funny, is his lackeys are telling him that his lame lines are good. But he's your world champion, and I don't think he should come across low rent. You know, and I just think he pales in comparison to Roman Reigns in terms of carrying himself as that you know, Ric Flair-esque centerpiece, best of his generation guy, and it doesn't seem like it's in him. You know, he's not hardwired to be that guy. And, oh, fans wouldn't be chanting cowboy shit. They'd be chanting coward shit. It's like, they need an editor. Unless the idea is for him to just be a low-rent goof, that's not good enough writing. And so that's a problem. So I guess, you know, I'd like to see the world champion have a bigger role, but to me it's playing off of Don Callis. You know, pay Don Callis, get him there, and, you know, enough to be there so he can carry Kenny, and then figure out who Kenny is and be cognizant of the fact that he's come across as kind of low-rent and flaky, and decide if that's who you really want to build around or else shift things around.
I mean, I guess two things about that. One, the character was definitely working the best at the start when Don Callis was his mouthpiece. And I think, you know, the sort of, we're going to do the Nick Bockwinkel thing, right?
Yeah.
And then the other thing would be – go ahead.
Oh, you're not watching Madcap Moss, are you?
I'm not.
Know what I'm talking about? Okay.
I know. I do know what you're talking
okay.
about.
Okay.
I don't get paid to watch it, so I don't.
So the reason I bring it up is what Kenny's doing in the box and Cole are like laughing at him. Oh, you're just hilarious. Like that kind of thing. That's low rent mid card stuff that Madcap Moss is doing with Baron Corbin. Happy Corbin laughing at his bad jokes. Like that's not prestige level work as a centerpiece main event heel. That's schmaltzy, silly, slapstick, mid-card stuff. Just going to Ashley's point again, if that's the work Kenny's doing, I don't think you can build the show more around him. Philosophically, I would lean towards AEW doing more with their champion. But I think it's got to be a different guy than Kenny or Callis with Kenny and then produce them better. And to repeat myself, be cognizant of not having him come across as a low-rent, flaky goof.
I mean, I think the fundamental, and we could do a whole podcast and a half on this, you know, dissecting Kenny's run. There's a big difference between New Japan Pro Wrestling and American Pro Wrestling television. In New Japan, Kenny was telling stories that mostly centered on him in the ring, and there wasn't a weekly TV show. There wasn't weekly promos to cut, right? It was – he would do backstage interviews, but it was mostly focused on the athleticism and his approach versus Okada's approach or his approach versus Tanahashi's approach or whoever it is he was wrestling against. And it was more sort of win-loss-based, athletic-based, and it wasn't – he was telling stories. He just wasn't telling American television wrestling stories, and he didn't really have a track record in that. And so this is now – what he's been asked to do, and we've seen the results. And so I don't know if you're going to – if he was going to adjust, you would think he would have adjusted already. And so the fact that he hasn't, you know, this is what he is.
Yeah. No, I know. It is what he is, but I think you can take the reins more if you're Tony Khan and say, here's 26.4% of you that we've seen the last 6 months that I want to turn into 98% of you. And then there's, let me do a quick math, 73.4% of you that I don't think is conducive to the role we have you in right now. And let's reduce that down to 2% and pick our spots. And amplify the strengths and edit the weaknesses. And I mean, that's what you need to do with the top guy. And that's one area where I just don't think Tony stepped up. And I think there's enough good in Kenny. Like, it sounds like I'm trashing him. I've gushed about him at times, but it's about 1 out of 4 weeks, you know, or 1 out of 4 times he's in a prominent spot where I'm like, that guy, more of that. And instead it's like 3/4 of the time he's that other guy. So, all right. Real quick, Eric, because I want to get to Josh before we lose him.
Kenny's got a whole run of dream matches coming up, so I don't think he's going to take any time off. And, just figure out a way to make it Kenny Danielson, right? Give us 45 minutes on a pay-per-view or whatever. Make it about the wrestling, right? Lean into his strengths, which is still being one of the best workers in the world.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Josh, I appreciate you hanging on. Josh is our on-site correspondent, along with a friend of yours. Josh, what's your friend's name who attended with you?
Hey, Chris here with me.
Hello.
Chris? Hey, Chris. So we got two on-site correspondents on the road. Thank you. How was the show overall? Good experience, Josh. How many AEW shows have you been to now?
This is actually my first AEW show.
Chris, really? Oh, wow. Okay. Okay.
I was
Even better.
Double or Nothing. The first one, the very first AEW show. Yeah.
Oh, nice. So, either of you, just kind of identify yourself as you talk, because listeners can kind of keep track then and just say, this is Josh or this is Chris. Just talk about your thoughts on the experience in the building overall. What do you remember most about tonight?
I think we both had consensus that, and this is Josh, by the way, I think we both had the consensus that at least I don't remember the last time I went to a wrestling show, namely a WWE show, where I was upset that they weren't taping another hour at the end. We realized about halfway through that, given that they have a whole Dynamite taping on Wednesday in Boston next week, there's no need to tape Rampage. So we sort of thought, and jump in whenever you want, Chris, but at least I sort of thought that they played their biggest stars fairly judiciously tonight. We had a really fun Bryan Danielson match. We had the Punk run-in, and obviously Cody and Black. But we got the Elite in promo version on the big screen, and we got a post-match segment or a post-show segment with CM Punk, which we can talk about in a little bit. But it really felt it was still satisfying, but it was a very kind of maintenance feeling show, at least in person. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, this is Chris. To add on to what Josh said, it kind of felt like, in a way, a filler episode, but there were still really, really good elements. The crowd absolutely loved Bryan Danielson versus Dustin Rhodes. And then when it came time for Cody versus Malakai Black, we were all aboard, you know, for that. Malakai Black got a huge reaction, and Cody Rhodes, obviously, I don't know if it came across on TV, but he got a lot of boos.
But it wasn't just boos; it was hostile.
Yeah,
like, to Ashley's point, it wasn't vitriol. Just boo; it was vitriol. Yes, jinx, vitriol. Yeah.
Yeah. So that was interesting to see nonetheless. Overall, though, I felt the show paced itself excellently. It didn't feel like it dragged at all. I remember Josh and I, when we went to, you know, not to draw comparisons, but when we went to Raw back in, June or August?
No, that was August.
August.
Yeah.
Feels like it's been longer than that, but when we went back in August, there were points of the show where we were like, gosh, we're not even an hour into
it. I actually came on this show and said it was 43 minutes into the show and we were ready to kind of get going.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And so so this show, it blew by. The crowd was hot the entire time. The crowd was super hot, even for the Elevation tapings that they did before the show. So honestly, pretty solid crowd for the night as far as noise goes. And yeah, just overall,
just fun.
Really good show.
Just
yeah,
good time.
It was a lot of fun. Yeah. It was just something, to Josh's point earlier, where I was like, man, like, yeah, I could have gone for another, a few matches of that. It was a good time. And like I had mentioned earlier, I was at the very first Double or Nothing, and I kind of felt the same way. I felt at that show where I was like, gosh, there's not one point where I'm looking at my watch and thinking, gosh, all right, we got X amount of time left. So, it was very smooth sailing.
Well, that is a high compliment for a wrestling show is, when you don't want it to end, you want there to be more. Because, as you said, that often isn't the case. Unfortunately, either due to duration or quality or, at worst, a combination of both, that combustible combination of a bad show that runs too long. How full was the building tonight? What's the capacity of the building? And of the seats that they could have sold that wouldn't have been obstructed by the stage, how many of them were tarped off or empty?
Nothing was tarped off out of what they could have sold. I'd say it was about 93%, to be very precise about it. The section with the hard camera. Yeah, down to the decimal. The section with the hard camera was full until the fifth row, and then the rest of that was unavailable. And then there was one section which was not tarped off right next to the stage on the side where the camera is, but it was unsold. So that was kind of just empty. But otherwise, what could have been sold, very, very close to sold out. I actually looked at Ticketmaster this morning, and they must have had a really good day off sales or a really good walk-up sales because it filled out a lot more than it looked like it was going to be based on the seat map this morning. I'm not sure if you follow WrestleTix on Twitter, but they do a really good job of showing you how things progress throughout the day of a show and really from the beginning of going on sale. And it seemed like there was a big rush of sales. I think it was about 4,000 sales on the offset, and then it really didn't move very much after the first week or so of sales. Until today, they seemed to move a bunch of tickets day off. So, yeah, filled out really nicely.
There was the middle of the show with Penelope Ford and Ruby Soho and then Bobby Fish and Anthony Green. Fish and Green was short, but nevertheless, there were ring introductions, and it's sort of like, did Dynamite end and Dark start? Like, that's kind of – I was wondering if the crowd was wondering that when that match began. How did both of those matches, including ring introductions and the whole thing, hold the crowd interest? Did they get – did because sometimes women's matches don't hold fan interest from our live correspondents as much as other stuff. And then, was there any restlessness when Bobby Fish and Anthony Green come out to the most generic music you can imagine?
Yeah, this is Chris speaking, but Ruby Soho actually got a pretty big pop. She had people singing along with her entrance music. The crowd seemed pretty hot for her. During the match, it was kind of iffy. I think everyone was using it more, I hate using this term, but they were using it like a concession break in ways, but it didn't really like overstay its welcome. It was more, it kind of felt like a breather through the show. And then Josh and I had actually both looked at each other when Bobby Fish was coming out because I personally really like watching Bobby Fish wrestle, but he actually did not have as much of a pop as you would think, and especially being in Orlando, obviously with the NXT tapings that have been happening here consistently for the past few years, you would expect him to get a bigger reaction, I would say, or at least I expected that, him being in Orlando, but it seemed like those were big breathing points for the show to kind of let the crowd catch its breath from like the Dustin versus Brian and such.
Hey, can I jump in? This is Josh. Did you guys pick up on the fact that we and I'd say most of the crowd actually didn't realize that it was Punk making the save until he took off his hat about 10 or 15 seconds into that intervention. And then he got a huge pop once people caught on. But it was very strange for a couple seconds there, not knowing who that
yes,
was.
The announcers acknowledged that. I can't remember which one it was, mentioned that. And I mentioned in my report at pwtorch.com that if Punk was trying to disguise himself, he couldn't have done a better job. You know, black shirt, black pants, it doesn't have his logo on it. You know, it's Rufus Sport Mixed Martial Arts, and people aren't going to recognize that from a distance. And then he's wearing a baseball cap. Like, if I'm going to, like, you know, shoplift, I'm going to pick Punk's outfit because I don't want anyone in the neighborhood to know it's me. So, yeah, that was kind of a weird choice. You might want to rethink that. That was a comical moment, and it's funny that you guys can testify to that being the case.
Yeah, there was a definite sense of, I mean, disappointment feels like a strong word. I think in general, I guess with the exception of the ending to the main event, the crowd was really contemptible throughout the evening. But there was some discontent I picked up on once Punk left, and there was no overt, let's have a match on Dynamite, or on Rampage, excuse me. And at this point, it's kind of clicking to us that, as we actually went through the thought process, I guess they're setting this up for a match on Rampage, which they'll tape after the show. And as time went by, we're kind of thinking, was that the only Punk we're going to see tonight? But he actually did come out at the end. Not to jump too far over the map. Did you want to talk a little bit about what happened after the show went off the air?
Yeah, go for it. Yep, good transition point.
I'm not sure at which point it faded from TNT, but Cody was celebrating in the ring, lots of boos, as you picked up on. He actually gets on the mic, and it feels like he's doing the 2011 John Cena, "We hope you entertained. We entertained you tonight." And he kind of went down that path a little bit, and then shifted to saying that. And at this point, still boos. And then it took a very hard turn. We felt a little bit bad. He starts talking about how Orlando is special to him because it's his dad's final resting place, and he'll always think of his dad when he wrestles in Orlando, and we're all like, geez, awkward.
You should have led with that in the pre-show.
Yeah. It got a respectful clap, you know, cheer reaction, and I think a lot of people might have rethought their passionate reactions after that, but no, he one way or another, he turned himself face. He ended up bringing out Sammy Guevara to do a filming of his, I guess he has a vlog, and they have a tradition of doing a dark segment at the end of these shows where Sammy Guevara films a segment for his blog. The Acclaimed came out and rapped on Cody and Guevara, and there were a few other mixed baby faces in the ring. And then, Chris, help me out. Tony Khan came out, and then fill in the blanks.
Yeah, so Tony Khan came out, and had basically made a statement like, you know, nobody wants to hear the Acclaimed rap. You know, everyone paid to see good wrestling tonight. The Acclaimed kept running their mouths. And then Tony Khan was like, the people also paid to see CM Punk. And then CM Punk made his entrance and everybody sang along.
He got a much bigger pop than he did when he took his hat off.
Yes.
Earlier
in the night. Yeah, he got a bigger pop off TV than he did on TV tonight.
I think people just really wanted to sing along to the entrance.
I think
the whole routine.
Yeah. Then Punk came out, and then Tony Khan, or Punk was saying, like, we can let you guys be, and Tony Khan came back out and said, you can't leave these guys get out of the ring.
And all they've done, you're going to let them go and skate?
Yeah, exactly. And then they all hit their finishers and sent the crowd home happy. Punk hit a GTS. Fuego del Sol hit his finisher.
Oh, and
then
Negative One pinned, I think he pinned, was it Bowens?
I think so, yeah.
It was Max Caster, I think he pinned.
It was one of them.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, so CM Punk counted a 1-2-3, negative one pinned. I'm pretty sure it was Max Caster. Yeah.
I'll trust you.
Yeah, and then Punk's music played, and everybody went home. I wrapped it up.
Did it seem like they gave you enough after Dynamite ended? You know, you say everybody went home happy, and that's sort of – sometimes we say that because that's the category it falls into and we call it that. But do you think it actually is true? Like, did the crowd seem fulfilled? Yes. Yes. So, I mean,
yeah.
Did it seem the crowd was happy, though, ultimately? Yeah.
Happy in the show was good, but it to be honest, as much as I enjoyed myself, and I don't know if you feel the same way, Chris, I could be more satisfied. I think that the vast majority of the crowd was underwhelmed not getting to see Black win. And I don't think a happy-go-lucky babyface, you know, it was great to see CM Punk, but I mean, it was very house show, kind of dark. Not to overuse the term, but it was very cliche off TV dark segment. It wasn't anything special that you would expect to see as a make good for a dissatisfying finish to the show. But you know, as far as they're concerned, as far as Cody, I will never turn heel is concerned, do they understand that that's a dissatisfying finish? I don't know.
Yeah, and to add on to what Josh is going to say, this is Chris. I think from the very beginning, from Black's entrance, and this might just be me, but you can jump in at any time. That crowd was ready to see Black win this series. That is, I mean, I think I could be speaking for 90% of the crowd. But when he made his entrance, despite the spotlight not shining on the right turnbuckle, people were invested in seeing Black win to the point to where any sort of kick out that Cody had was booed. You know, when people from the Nightmare family were coming down, they were getting booed. And anytime Black was looking like he was on the offense, he was getting a huge ovation. So I think it kind of deflated people, myself included a little bit, when Cody pinned him and there was that final three count. And I just thought to myself, okay, I get that we don't have to do the undefeated new star all the time, and I totally understand that. I don't feel like this was the time and place that people expected Black to lose, and I think that's why it was kind of underwhelming. And I also think that may have led into the after show promo that Cody cut, because if you had just cut straight to if it cut off right there without anything and Cody just went up to the back, you would have a lot of people not too thrilled, and I think they kind of left on a little bit of a better note, but still a little underwhelmed off of that result, because I think that's what people were really invested in.
I think we appreciate that they tried to sweeten the mood, and that makes us feel better, but it's not a full sense of satisfaction, put it that way.
Eric Kroll is the co-host today, and Eric, you've been listening in. Is there anything you want to add in terms of questions for Chris and Josh?
Sure. So during Jungle Boy and Brandon Cutler, they did that post-match attack on Jungle Boy where they threw him off the stage onto a crash pad. It seemed like there wasn't a lot of heel heat for that. What was the crowd reaction to that?
Where is Luchasaurus? So it was kind of a murmur of, someone's coming out, right? So it was more a quiet anticipation, not so much boo, how dare you attack Jungle Boy. It's okay, hold on, wait for the pop, we're all going to pop, he's going to come out, and he didn't come out. That was at least my take on it.
Yeah, and this is Chris again. I would say there was that, and also when Sting was getting beat down, it was more of a factor of, okay, well, where are these people that we would normally expect to come out? Where are they coming out?
Yeah, the Sting really have no other friends. This legend not having anyone to watch it back.
Exactly. So it's a little continuity, things like that. I will say, I think a lot of people were very, very surprised with the bump that Jungle Boy took going off the stage. And I think it was more of like a shock of like, oh my gosh, that just happened, kind of ordeal. And, you know, I don't know how well it came across on TV, but I think all of us, we were just like, good grief. Like,
he almost cleared both tables.
So, it was a little scary. And then,
especially after the Archer.
Yeah, exactly what Josh had mentioned. Actually, Lance Archer moonsault was pretty difficult to watch happen. And I had actually told Josh earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Lance Archer was climbing the turnbuckle early in the match. And I looked at Josh and I thought to myself, and I told him, I was like, oh, what do you think? He's going to do a moonsault? Like, jokingly, because I was like, no, there's no need for him to do a moonsault. And then 2-3 minutes later, goes on the other turnbuckle and does a moonsault and lands, from our view, lands on his neck.
It very much has that kind of mood of that stunned silence of, you know, Brock Lesnar shooting star press from WrestleMania 19.
Yeah.
So that kind of like, oh.
Yeah.
Hey.
And it was like kind of sucked the air out of the building for a brief moment until really we saw that he walked himself to the back. But still, I mean, those little things throughout the night kind of people were – a little indifferent on that because they're like, we don't know how we should register.
Well, I could
this.
Go two lifetimes without seeing Daniel Bryan take a PAL driver again.
Yeah.
That much.
I
didn't
one bit. Yep.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's not like, well, trust us, we know what we're doing. Sometimes it's like, well, trust us as viewers to have emotions tied to your history that takes us out of the moment when you do moves that feel more self-indulgent than adding to our entertainment. Like, just like, I don't care if you feel comfortable and medically you're clear. Just, we don't want to see you do that. That's how I feel with Brian sometimes, you know, it's, you know, you're doing it for you, not for us. And yeah, we don't need pile drivers.
Like layer of discomfort with Brian anyway, kind of knowing his own admission that he has lied about his health. It's like, how am I supposed to reconcile hearing this and feeling comfortable with this anyway?
So we didn't see we saw Archer, you know, get the Mahastral cradle thing, and you know, he rolled himself to the ring and, you know, went back in. But talk about how he looked walking to the back, because that was not on camera.
He had a referee with an arm over his shoulder, and he was mostly supporting his own way. I mean, he looked really shaken up naturally, but he did seem to be mostly under his own steam. But once the adrenaline wears off, I think he's kind of pretty sore.
And also, I don't know if it matters, but he did not walk up the ramp. He actually walked off to the side of the ramp and kind of like through the back way. So.
Yeah. I hope he's okay. And I think you're right. I don't know if he's going to remember what happened. I hope they do. Well, I'm sure they'll do thorough tests on that neck and give him time off for, you know, possible concussion. And just, they need to stop trusting wrestlers who might be concussed to be the best judge of whether they can continue a match at all and just call the match off. I mean, I think fans expect it more. Eric, anything else you want to jump in with a question on?
How long did they make you sit through the Elevation taping? I was at the United Center when Punk made his debut, and I sat through close to 2 hours of just like nearly 20 squash matches. And I was maybe it's because I was typing the results out to get them to some websites, but man, it was exhausting. Was it an hour? Was it a half hour? 2 hours? The Elevation taping?
Like, not even like, I think it was about 45 minutes because they started about 7:05. I think the last match wrapped up like 7:40 something. So it's pretty brisk actually.
Yeah.
I think they just did Elevation and they didn't do Dark and they didn't do multiple shows. So lucky you, Eric, you got the extended version, extended cut.
Yeah. Well, they're actually they're in town through tomorrow taping at Universal Studios, and I think they have like two or three different taping sessions beginning like 11 a.m. or something like that.
Yeah, one. They have a taping tomorrow at 1 p.m.
1 p.m. That's right.
And another one at 5 p.m. So, yeah.
Was there any news made during Elevation?
Yeah, anything jump out that's worth passing along? Spoiler free if you can help it for those who care. But
yeah. I have to admit, I don't watch a ton of the shoulder content. I don't think you do either, Chris. So we actually didn't recognize most of the names. But they introduced three kind of local talent for what we thought was going to be a trios match. So we're thinking, a six-man tag team match. So we're thinking, who's
thank you.
Out? And
I really appreciate
they actually, of course, I pay very close attention. We're thinking who's coming out, and they actually played Paul White's music, and he stepped up from the commentary desk in his gear and went in for a 3-on-1 handicap match, and I don't think I need to spoil that one.
Right.
Everything else on the taping was pretty, you know, unremarkable. It was fun. I mean, nothing was. Eric, you know, didn't sound like we had anything like the experience you did. It didn't really drag. I think they had three or four matches, and everything was pretty. You know, a pretty decent clip.
Good.
Who had the most heel heat? Dan Lambert, MJF. That's usually the battle. between those two these days. I guess we'll set Cody aside, although you're welcome to rate him compared to those two, and anyone else competes in that mix.
Yeah, this is Chris, but I would definitely say MJF had the most, to the point where in the arena, when he started cutting his promo, couldn't hear a word that he was saying.
We're just booing his tone at that point.
Exactly. You knew that there was noise coming out of the microphone. You couldn't really pick it up because of how loud the boos were in the actual arena. So I don't know how well that came across on TV, but I would say he definitely got a lot of heat, probably the most out of the whole night, next to Dan Lambert and American Top Team. And then, like you mentioned, Cody, but I would actually put Cody in a different bracket as far as, like,
it was vitriol. It was just a very different tone. I actually looked at Chris, and this is, of course, Josh. I actually looked at Chris during the Cody Black match, and I'm like, this doesn't feel comfortable. This is like, you know, it was, I think it was Ashley who called in earlier, and she said it was profane. It was really, lots of, a few different variations of F.U. Cody, you know, and more.
I had told Josh during the match, I was like, this might be Cody's version of One Night Stand 2006, you know, like it was for John Cena. Because, I mean, there were people just yelling whatever they wanted to, and they were vulgar about it.
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but I have to say, the feeling, I was having a really hard time encapsulating the feeling, what it was like when Cody won, and knowing that Cody was about to win, it felt like being there for kind of those, 2011-12 imminent John Cena victories, or the 2015-16 imminent Roman Reigns victories, where it's like this hollow sense of, I'm going to cheer for my guy, but I know what's coming. I can feel it coming.
Yeah.
And when he wins, it's just like this deflation.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry to cut you off. I just had to output that because you just triggered that for me.
Yeah. So I would definitely say that those were the reactions of the night as far as boos go.
Josh and Chris, you guys are great. We could probably talk to you longer. I want to get to people who have been on hold for like an hour and a half too here. So add anything else that you want. Add anything else that you think is pertinent that we haven't gotten to, first of all. And then second of all, I want you to close with your just theory on what went wrong with Cody. Keep it sort of pithy. This isn't a 5-minute, we can talk another week if you want to go longer on it. But just, kind of your gut for being in the building, what happened with Cody? Because Eric and I spent a decent amount of time earlier in the show speculating on that.
The pomp and circumstance of it all. As soon as Aleister Black's entrance music started to fade down, the chandelier set piece begins to lower, and it's like, oh God, he's going to come out from behind the chandelier, and it's going to be a whole production, and then the operatic music kicks in, and it's just like, here we go. It's too much by half, and then some. It's so produced and orchestrated and inside. I think some of it too is just knowing, I know that functionally the power situation today is a little bit different, with the EVPs, but just knowing that he gets that treatment, not because it's ostensibly earned by his performances. And he I do not want to, portray that he doesn't earn, his role and what he has. He's worked extremely hard, I'm sure. But I think if you want to operate as one of the guys on the TV show, you kind of need to leave the privileges at the curtain. And Cody doesn't leave his privileges at the curtain. And I'm sorry, I don't think I articulated that the way I intended to, but that's kind of my best summation of it.
I think you did great.
And really quickly to add on to what Josh had just said, this is Chris, but I think you pair him up against a guy like Malakai Black, and it's almost like it's what I said earlier. People want to see Black win. People buy into Black's aura and his mystique so much so that you look at a guy like Cody and you kind of like roll your eyes and you're like, gosh, I hope that this guy doesn't beat a guy like Black because I like the things that Black is doing. And I think a lot of people felt that way in this feud. I don't really see them doing the same things in those feuds that he had in the past, especially with MJF. You know, you look at that feud and it's like nobody wanted MJF to win that, you know, and so they were pulling for Cody. So I think it's a case of like, okay, of course, Cody's going to put himself against the next hottest guy in wrestling, obviously, before Punk came back. But he's going to put himself in this storyline with currently the hottest product that they had at that point. And then you're thinking, oh, my gosh, is he going to beat this guy that we really want to see? And you kind of roll your eyes. I think that just builds up over time, and thus you get a reaction like you got tonight.
I'm so sorry. This is Josh again. I just want to add one more thing. The other thing that stuck out to me is I don't think Cody's through this arc that he's had through being booed and losing to Black and, you know, having Arn Anderson play the tough love card, I don't think he's struggled enough. They've kind of played this as if it's been like a 3 or 4 month story arc in which Cody's, you know, since his last loss to Black has gone through some kind of divine improvement and he's a different Cody now and he's gone through the struggle and come out the other end a changed man. And I don't really believe that. I mean, we have, I think, 2 vignettes, one with Arn showing up at Cody's house and burning his suits, and then another one where, you know, Cody was getting, I don't know, like, he slapped upside the head by a bunch of trainees, and we're supposed to believe that he has some kind of growth that should make us cheer him now. It's not really believable.
Yeah, and then you do the same over-the-top grandiose ring entrance, and it shows there's a lack of self-awareness right. That then just feeds into, you know, that was propaganda, but you didn't really change, and, you know, that just fuels it, yeah. Fuels the pushback. Yeah.
Yeah.
Great, guys. Appreciate it so much. Any quick final note from either of you that isn't Cody related on the show, or is that pretty much hit the point?
So I was racking my brain to think of any kind of fun off-camera happenings, and the only one that sticks out is totally irreverent, but while MJF was on his way to the ring doing his promo, and I think he said something to the effect of, Sting, you don't want to answer questions from this talentless nobody, referring to Tony Schiavone, and off-camera, Tony just puts up the double birds up the ramp to MJF, and that got a laugh from the fans in that area. I don't think they caught that on camera, but it was just the timing was brilliant.
That's tremendous.
But no, Chris, anything to stick out to you?
No, I mean it was a good show. So
yeah, we had fun. Yeah. Notwithstanding the air of dissatisfaction at the end, a very very good time, and I can't wait to go back to AEW.
Mm-hmm.
Good Dang. Stuff.
All right, Josh, Chris, thank you so much. You guys were great to talk to.
Likewise. Thank you, guys. Have a good rest of the show.
Absolutely. Have a great rest of the night.
Thank you. Yep. Safe travels. All right, very good. Thanks to our callers who have held on. If you're joining us live, this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. We're covering the special Saturday Night Dynamite. I'm Wade Keller. The other voice you'll hear is Eric Kroll. I almost said Eric Bischoff, which is very weird. I don't know how that almost happened.
83 weeks.
The other voice you'll hear soon is Eric Kroll, unless Eric Bischoff calls. Back when I did Pro Wrestling Focus in the early 90s on KFAN radio, and Eric was in the AWA, he's in WCW at that point, and he called the show sometimes. Maybe it was just once. I think it was 2 or 3 times. He just called the show sometimes to check in on things and probably say mean things about something that I said that was mean about WCW, or I don't know. So who knows? You never know who's going to drop in. But our number is 347-215-8558. When you call, just a reminder, you have to push 1 on your keypad to flag you on our switchboard. Otherwise, you'll just be in the background. If you flag yourself by pushing 1, then we know you're ready and want to be brought onto the program. Speaking of which, we had good caller support tonight, and I appreciate everybody who's held on. Most of you have. We'll go to Bryant in Boston next. Brian, just a warning, I want to, because we've already run really long, and I know you held on, so I'm not going to rush you through the call, but we're not going to go really long with each caller out of respect to those who are still on hold. Brian, welcome. What stood out on Dynamite tonight?
First of all, can you guys hear me okay?
Yeah, you sound like you're like hiding under a pillow so someone sleeping in the other bunk bed can't hear you or something, but yeah, you sound fine.
Okay, thank goodness.
Did I describe the scene?
Like,
no, I'm kidding. Go ahead.
And, I am lying down, but
yeah.
But if I'm going to be the on-site correspondent for next week, then it helps if you can hear me. So, thank goodness.
Sure. Yeah. Yes.
By the way, did you get the email I sent earlier?
I am a little behind on emails this weekend, but
okay. You get a chance.
Yeah. I'll take a look. I just looked it up. I hadn't even opened it yet. I've just been running all over the place the last few days.
Yeah, I can imagine. But anyway, I thought the show was pretty good. I mean, you know, it wasn't like spectacular or anything like that. But you know, it did a good job building up the storylines and stuff. As far as Cody Rhodes, Malakai Black, I think there was a lot more chicanery, I guess, in that match than there should have been. And you know, I would have liked to see Black win, you know, but Cody Rhodes had already got beaten by him twice, so it was kind of like I knew that Cody was going to win that match. But as far as what's next for Malakai Black, I think a good feud would, if they're going to keep him heel, then I think a good feud for him might be once the American Top Team feud finishes, I think maybe going up against Sammy Guevara for the TNT title might not be a bad idea. I think that could be potentially a good feud.
Eric.
So what do you guys think about that possibility?
Yeah, Eric, your thoughts on that.
Black versus Sammy, is that the...
For the TNT title, yes.
Yeah, I feel like if Black takes on Sammy, he almost has to win, because I still don't think Sammy's been elevated even to as high of a position in the promotion as Black is, just by getting himself over the way he did. So it just strikes me as weird to have Black beating Sammy, to have Sammy beating Black, it doesn't seem right. And to have Black beat Sammy, you'd be cutting Sammy off without, you know, before you had a chance to build him. So I don't know. Do you want to have Black take two losses in a row if they want to keep the belt on Sammy long term?
Well, maybe they wait a little bit to do that feud then if they're going to do it. So.
Yeah, they have a deep roster, but it's so many people are paired off. It's like, you know, and again, then there's the issue of should Black, you know, even be facing baby faces at this point. And if they do you want to be the next baby face he faces? Like, to me, like Malakai Black has a baby face against Brian Cage, you know, or they haven't really protected Powerhouse Hobbs. And they just have a ton of people on the roster who just aren't at that level. You know, I mean, you could, you know, have Max Caster, you know, be irritating and Black beats him, you know, but it's not like, you know, a high-end feud. So it's not, you know, it's weird, but as deep as our roster is and as, you know, I don't know how many ex-WWE guys, you know, that they keep signing and bringing in, you know, maybe Tony Nese is going to be his next opponent. I don't know. It's not an embarrassment of riches in terms of options, whether he's a face or heel, in part because, you know, it just seems like the top guys, Cole, Punk, Danielson, are all kind of paired off. If I'm CM Punk, I don't want any part of Malakai Black right now, for instance.
Well, I wouldn't want any part of Malakai Black either. I'd rather not get my head kicked in. But
well,
anyway,
there is that. But as a baby face, you know, unless you're looking to get
better. Yeah, true. It's to kind of transition over to women a little bit. Ruby Soho and Penelope Ford, I mean, it was a decent match. I mean, you know, I'm really looking forward to the Hikaru Shida, Sarita Deeb rematch next week. That's going to be something special. Hopefully the crowd in Boston will treat it with the respect that it deserves. But you know how Boston fans can be sometimes, but we'll see. But
I don't like Shida being in a qualifying match and Nyla Rose getting the bye. I mean, I know they're doing Ross Dress, they're doing current rankings, but it's just the totality of it. Well, go ahead, Eric. Yeah.
Yeah. When I looked it up before they announced that it was based on the ranking system, I thought that was weird too. So I Googled the rankings and I'm like, oh, those are the top four ranked women besides Ty Conti, who is obviously being paired up with Britt for the pay-per-view. So, I mean, I guess you may quibble with the rankings and how they mostly ignore them, but here's a case where they're actually trying to stick to the rankings to give a rhyme or reason to why those women have the bye. So I guess I'm okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to be an advocate for them following the rankings and then be like, why is she having to qualify in Nyla Rose? And Nyla Rose, it's hardly like a high crime. I mean, she's been pushed and she's a former champ and all that. It's just, Sheeta had such a good run and it's just like, just feels like, you know, having her not advance based on the legacy of her work in Dynamite feels wrong, but whatever, you know, it's like small detail. Go ahead, Brent.
I did just have one question for you guys on the women's picture in general. Since it seems like in the tournament with the way it's going with the buys, it looks like Thunder Rosa and Jade Cargill are probably going to have a one-on-one match. And, you know, given that there was that sheet that Tony Khan was holding at the Jacksonville Jaguars game that showed Thunder Rosa versus Jade Cargill at Full Gear potentially. However that matchup takes place, whether it's Full Gear or in the tournament, do you see Thunder Rosa handing Jade Cargill a first loss? Because to me, it makes sense because Cargill has to lose to somebody at some point. I mean, and yeah. You know, they're obviously building up Thunder Rosa to take on Britt Baker and possibly take the title from her. You know, if the rumors are believed or to be believed, I would assume at Revolution or something, because I guess, you know, rumors are going around it's going to be a big stipulation match or something like that. So I was just wondering about your thoughts on that.
Yeah, the Jade Cargill arc is interesting, and so is when, you know, how big should her loss be and in what context and to whom?
Yeah.
You could imagine, you know, Britt Baker turning babyface, but sort of being reframed over time into a babyface spot just to not fight the crowd. And if she beat Jade Cargill, that'd be a huge moment. But do you want to feed, you know, is that the course they're on with Britt? Is that how they'd want, you know, to give her a boost over Jade? Or like you're saying, you know, is it more logical to have Thunder Rosa get a boost from that and keep Britt heel and have Thunder as a face? Go ahead, Brian, and then I'll throw it here.
I mean, I almost think you have to put Thunder Rosa over, given how she already got pinned by Jade with that really sloppy set of chair shots in that triple threat match. That's just my thought.
Hogan-esque chair shots, yeah. Eric?
Yeah, not good.
Right, exactly.
So let's play this out. If Thunder Rosa wins, she gets the belt. I thought they were supposedly saving the Thunder Rosa Britt Baker rematch for early 2022. So then what does that do? Is that belt versus belt?
You're talking if she wins the TBS belt?
Right, yeah.
Oh, okay.
That's one, okay. If Rosa wins the TBS belt, then I guess if they're really going to program her with Britt, then that becomes a belt versus belt situation. If Cargill wins, it gives her something to do, and it keeps her away from the challenging Britt, right? Because you'd have a heel versus heel, even though Britt is mostly cheered most of the time. But then if Rosa loses that match and their next plan is to program Thunder Rosa against Britt Baker, you need to build Rosa back up from her loss. So, I think I agree, Bryant, with your prediction that Rosa gets her win back and probably wins that one. But I could see him going with Cargill. I wouldn't be shocked at that outcome.
What about go ahead, Bryant.
I mean, it's possible they have Thunder Rosa beat Cargill in the tournament match, but it's not like a finals match or anything. It's possible they could have her beat Cargill, but still not win the tournament.
Let me call up the bracket. The other thing that they talked about was they had a Brit promo where she's trying to build heat for the match against Ty Conti, and the focal point of it was that Britt was complaining that Ty shows off her ass all the time, whether that's on social media or her cheeky ring gear that she does. that seemed very WWE to me, and I didn't like it at all, right? It wasn't giving women their own agency, and they were feuding over something important. I mean, it was heelish, so I guess, you know, maybe Baker gets the pass on that, but I just felt vaguely uncomfortable by that, or, you know, a little unpleasant.
Yeah. Can I just bring up one more point since you just brought up WWE? This will be my last point because I know you guys are running long, so I'll hang up after this. Seeing as how you brought up WWE, given the given all the controversy that's happened with Charlotte Flair and Becky Lynch with that belt incident and the supposed backstage argument they had, and then with Charlotte just storming, with Charlotte just ignoring Vince McMahon, the gorilla position, assuming all that's true, I got to think, and I know people may disagree with me on this, but I got to think whenever Charlotte's contract expires, whenever that may be, I got to think she's AEW bound, because Ric Flair is no longer with WWE, her significant other's with AEW, and, you know, she's pretty much done everything in WWE that she's wanted to do, and the bottom line is Tony Khan can scratch her a check that's as big or bigger than Vince can's. And, with what happened with Nia Jax and the controversy and everything, I just think she's getting fed up with there. So I think there's a good chance she goes to AEW as soon as she gets the chance. So thank you guys for taking my call, and I'll leave you for tonight.
Thanks, Brian. Well, if wrestlers in AEW are communicating with wrestlers in WWE and they did a secret ballot, it's going to be near unanimous that Tony Khan's going to get votes from the roster, not wanting Charlotte brought into that locker room. You know, to say Charlotte's fed up is probably not the way that I would frame it based on what I'm hearing. I would say everybody is fed up with Charlotte, and it's been an increasing problem this year. I mean, you know, I was told by somebody on the roster, nobody wants to wrestle her, and she's just, you know, well, anyway, I'll get more into it on the Color Hotline tonight. Eric, your thoughts on Charlotte, both, I mean, obviously the talent, she's fantastic. She's got a presence and an aura and a history. She's a legacy star. She's done a lot to bring women's wrestling to another level. She speaks the truth on her promos as far as that goes, and the credibility can back her up, and she's, you know, super talented. She'd be an asset. But, you know, do you bring someone in? I don't know if he did due diligence on Bray Wyatt, and that's why he's not, you know, bringing him in, and Braun Strowman, but it's one thing to bring in the guys who you think are underutilized but are popular. It's another thing to bring in people who are seen as difficult, combative. What's the word when you don't listen to your insubordinate? Think they're bigger than the show they're part of, or have a reputation for being selfish or unpredictable in bad ways that are disruptive to everything else. I mean, do you want to bring that in, Eric?
I mean, I have heard it reported that Andrade wants his whole family, his extended Andrade family, in AEW. I guess my question would be, does Tony Khan want the extended Andrade family? Because that includes Charlotte Flair, who, you know, Tony Khan did not bring in Tessa Blanchard, even though his women's division was sucking wind for the longest period of time. And so Tony Khan seems to be concerned about locker room chemistry to some extent, and Charlotte might, you know, fall into the category of more trouble than she's worth, maybe.
Something, but it also is what most people in WWE, I would venture to say, would say is how it plays out right now, that she is amazing, and she's also more trouble than she's worth.
Yeah, I don't know how many years Charlotte has left on her deal, but my guess would be Tony Khan wouldn't be able to resist, right? As far as women go, I mean, she's a top name, you know, a top star type signing.
I would talk with her when it's contractually legal,
sure,
and find out what's going on with her. I would do my due diligence beyond being starstruck with the business opportunity and make sure you know what, you know, and obviously with Andrade there's some, you know, they can be good or it can be bad. You know, you can be amplifying, you know, some trouble too, if you empower her more with what's going on. But, you know, I mean, it's worth getting her side of things and figuring out what's going on in her head. And, you know, I mean, but it's not just, she's, you know, fed up with management, you know, it's colleagues who used to be friends with hers who don't know who she's become and what's going on with her. And, you know, to the point that it's just, you know, disconcerting.
Yeah, it would be a really big check. You'd probably have to write to get her. So I think good to do your due diligence. For the record, Thunder Rosa and Jade Cargill, if they win their quarterfinal matches, they are on the same side of the bracket, so they would be meeting in the semis. So yep. Brian's correct. It doesn't necessarily mean the winner has to go and win the TBS yep. belt. So it's a little until we see who the semis are, I think that's a little harder to predict than the men's title shot tournament, where it's obviously Moxley and Danielson meeting in the finals.
Yeah. I mean, I could see Nyla and Ruby in the other bracket in the semis.
Mm-hmm.
There's yeah. a lot of ways it could go. I mean, I don't want to play out the whole tournament here. But yeah, there's definitely more options here than in the Eliminator tournament. It seems that are viable. All right, cool. Brian, thanks. Appreciate it. Always good to hear from you. We'll be talking to you as our on-site correspondent too next week. I'll get back to you in that email. All right, let's go next to Hinton in London, Ontario, not England. Hinton, welcome. Thanks for holding. How are you doing? Did Hinton fall asleep? That happens sometimes when people aren't hold a long time. Or he's muted.
He's on East Coast time. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, Hinton. We tried.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we sure can. Hey, sometimes you got to run and get a glass of water.
Sorry,
how you doing?
No
problem.
Good. Is it okay if I talk about Rampage last night?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah, I wanted to bring up the post-match angle between Pac and Andrade because that really upset me, and it played into tonight's main event. So basically, not one millisecond after Pac won, the lights went out and there's Malakai Black. I thought it was exciting for the live crowd because I heard cheers that they could have been piped in. I'm not sure. I kind of felt like I was in the minority here, but I felt that defined down Pac and Andrade as kind of just undercard acts who don't really deserve as much attention once the match is over. And I mean, from a booking standpoint, I'm like, it makes total sense for Cody to want to insert himself here, kind of like Triple H would, so that he could build off the energy of this really good match that Pac and Andrade just had. And I've actually, in my instant message column, I was about to write almost Triple H-like, and then I deleted that. I'm like, nah, maybe I'm getting too ahead of myself. But then I saw tonight, he basically, at the end of the match, he's putting Malakai Black in that pedigree-like position to deliver the Tiger Driver powerbomb, whatever it's called. I'm like, oh my God, he's actually going to nail a pedigree here. But getting a little ahead of myself. But I thought it how do you think this affects Pac and Andrade? I think it makes them look completely irrelevant compared to Cody, and that may have been one of the contributing factors to his reaction tonight.
Eric, what do you think?
I think that crowd was hell-bent on booing Cody from the get-go, and he could have cured cancer and saved a baby from a burning building and a cat from a tree, and I think he still would have got booed. I think on Rampage, they were just – I take your point. I think it's a good one that by having that post-match angle so quickly – we didn't get to bask in the glory of what ended up being a really good Pac-Andrade match. On the other hand, you only get an hour, and they needed to do the angle last night to air that to set up what happened tonight. So I guess from a storyline perspective, it made sense. And it seems like they're either setting up a pay-per-view tag match with Pac and Cody against Andrade and Black, or another TV match. And so since Cody probably wants to be on the pay-per-view, I'm guessing it's on the pay-per-view. But, I mean, I guess from a booking standpoint, it made sense to me from how you book these things. But the monkey in the wrench, the fly in the ointment, was the fact that Cody is getting booed instead of cheered. And mm-hmm. that's a problem they have to deal with.
What do you think of that, Hinton?
Yeah, want to move on. Just want to get my points in real quick here to move on to other
sure.
callers. Adam Page, I'm not sure if you talked about him tonight. He was out there, not out there, but like backstage with the Dark Order. Now, he delivered the promo of his life last week, and Eric was here. He was all, you know, he was excited about it. I was excited about it. But today, he's building up to his point, and his point is, guys, the Elite, they're going to come out in some pretty fancy Halloween costumes next week, and you'd better bring your A game. That's the most important thing for us to focus on right now. So what do you guys make of his goal point right now being Halloween costumes?
I'm glad you brought that up. It's not great that the guy who cut one of my favorite promos in years as a babyface addressed, covered so much territory, brought everything to a crescendo, and that's their follow-up? That's their follow-up is him joshing around with Dark Order saying, you guys are right, and then it shifts to Halloween costumes. And I know, you know, John Silver's kind of like the cult figure and all that, but it's, I don't know. It felt like the wrong week to be doing that. What do you think, Eric?
I mean, I think the fact that Paige was catching up with old friends, he said he was going to do that in that you know, after he won that ladder match a couple weeks ago, Tony Schiavone interviewed him during the first break of Roads to the Top, and he said he was going to go catch up with old friends. So he's doing what he said he was going to do on that front. The problem is, yeah, I mean, he's talking about a Dark Order Elite match that's going to be played for comedy and that they're all going to be in costumes. So I'm already dreading that match on next Wednesday's Dynamite because it's going to be it's not going to be serious. It's going to be comedy. And I guess, you know, it's fine, whatever. It's the Dark Order. But, we certainly did not keep up the forward momentum that was established last week from Paige's promo as they build to that, what's presumably the main event of the full year pay-per-view.
This goes around to the question earlier about, you know, having a centerpiece program that's weaved throughout the show that you know is the A program. And it's just that wasn't, I mean, I know it's a Saturday night show and they're going to have lower viewership and maybe we kick things into full gear. I guess I said it, starting Wednesday, the build to full gear kicks into full gear come Wednesday. You shouldn't have laughed. That was lame, but no, I'll take it. I appreciate it. I'll take it when I can get it. Last week was about your world title and the challenger you've been building up who got delayed because of the baby. And he cut this great promo and like lead with that. I mean, I know philosophically they're like, hey, we're a wrestling company. We're going to put a good 15-minute wrestling match out there. It's part of a tournament. And, you know, we don't just dwell on one thing and we're about lots of things. And I get that, but man, in terms of storytelling and, you know, they're just, it's like when CM Punk, you know, was on Dynamite for the first time and they booked just AEW dark level stuff before and after him. It's like, what are you doing? You're trying to pop a rating and people are sampling the product. Put your best foot forward. What comes before and right after and right after is super important. And I thought it killed their momentum. And so, I mean, again, it's a Saturday Dynamite. I'd be harder on them if it was a Wednesday show, but I mean, still just have that cohesive major theme of what's most important. And that does seem to be, among the top weaknesses of an imperfect, believe it or not, AEW booking scheme. Eric.
I think I have a bad feeling about in the back of my head about AEW momentum going into full gear for no other reason than TNT, I guess. I looked it up. They're airing the NHL, the West Coast game, so the 9 p.m. Central starts, the 10 p.m. Eastern starts. And so what's happening is that Dynamite's going to be preempted and aired on tape delay. So if you are on the West Coast or in the Mountain Time Zone, you're getting it after the NHL game is over. You're getting the NHL game in prime time because of the time delay. And so I think the Wrestling Observer reported this week that could cost AEW 10% of their 10 or 11% of their live audience. So, and that's going to be until they go over to TBS next year. So that's, just when AEW was building some momentum after the kind of phony baloney ratings demo battle of last Friday's Rampage show, it seems like they're stalling for reasons out of their control a little bit. So I'm hoping they really turn up the volume the next 3 weeks and we get a hell of a full gear show in Minneapolis next month.
Hitting anything else for us?
Yeah, just a final point before I sign off here. I know you have a hotline to get to, which I look forward to listening to. Miro's character direction. So ever since he's lost, he's been trying to, in his promos, he's been trying to reconcile the loss as someone who's like, who genuinely thinks God has abandoned him, right? Initially, I'm wondering, like, why not just attack Sammy Guevara? You're at the show, dude. But if I take off my WWE glasses, I'm like, in character, it makes sense that he's having this narcissistic heartbreak of sorts, and he's going to, you know, give God no choice but to, you know, make him his champion again. So do you see a pathway for him back to the TNT title, given that Sammy's busy with American Top Team, or do you see something different in Miro's future?
Yeah, it seems like they're playing kind of long ball with this, and I'm enjoying the ride, Eric. Miro's just in a category unto himself, and that can be good or bad, you know, but in this case, it's good. You know, he's got his own thing he's doing, and it's compelling. It's not eating up a lot of TV time, but on a per-minute basis, I think it has a high impact, and, yeah, you know, he's good. In the ring, I'm one of his biggest fans and have been, like, early on with his WWE work too. And I know he's getting praise among his colleagues for the work he was doing at house shows and bringing along Roman Reigns. And I mean, he's just smart and he's high IQ in the ring and on the mic. So I'm a fan of his and I want to see him, you know, bring these to something that then pays off with something different than the vignettes and ends up with him higher up on the card. Cause I think there's a good number of people he should leapfrog. In what I think right now would be most people's roster depth chart. Eric?
I thought it was weird because after Miro beats Eddie Kingston in the TNT title match at All Out, they did a promo the next week to sort of recap, and it made it sound like the feud wasn't over. And I thought, oh, maybe Eddie Kingston's going to win the belt at Arthur Ashe Stadium because he's from New York. But then that didn't happen. They didn't have another match. And they seem to be maybe teasing a Miro-Sammy rematch, except he hasn't really explicitly said that, Miro, in all these promos. And me personally, I'd love to see Miro move up the card and get a push near the top because I think he's pretty talented in the ring, and he cracks me up behind the mic. So better than the TNT title. Let's get him a world title run. Maybe he's the a TV challenger for Hangman Page in January or early February in the build-up to Revolution.
Or a Clash special. I would just say what Miro is doing now means more than what Kenny Omega did at the Tokyo Dome 5 years ago. Like, when you're evaluating who can bring you the most viewers and give you the best mic work and seem high-end and fresh and just hitting your stride and all that, like, just be sure you're paying attention to what's on your TV show that all your people are seeing as opposed to what was happening 5 years ago across the ocean when you make your decisions. And it's not to say Omega's not the guy to go with, but be sure you're not putting more stock in something than you should when somebody right in front of you, you know, it's like Steve Austin yes, I'm daring to do this, but Miro's a lot older than Austin when Austin was breaking out, but you know, Austin was doing great work and Vince was looking everywhere but there, you know, and it's like, no, right here, here's your guy. And then he went with it, you know, but so anyway, Miro's good and high end good. Hinton, thanks for the call. Appreciate it.
Perfect. Thank you guys for taking it. See you later.
Sure thing. Yeah. Appreciate it. All right. We'll go to Nick in Brattleboro. And then after that, we'll wrap up with Javier. Nick, welcome. What's the Dynamite for you tonight?
Actually, you stole one of my, or Hinton stole one of my point. Miro was just, I mean, he was so good tonight. You know, my bloody hands and my wife, and it was like he was reciting Shakespeare and holding the skull and saying, oh, poor York, I knew him. I mean, he's just doing such a good job. And I love him. I think he's so far ahead of Kenny right now. It's amazing. Yes, Kenny's great in the ring and stuff, but, I mean, what Miro's doing all around – as a wrestler, you know, for all that means, he's far and away the best thing on WWE right now. He and Bryan Danielson are right there for me.
Yeah. Yep.
It's one thing I was thinking, and if I'm gonna, it's not so much fantasy booking as just question booking, is they're going to TBS on what, January 5th, I think it is. What if Hangman wins the title at Full Gear, and then Cody swallows his pride and goes heel, and they have the Cody Hangman match on that first TBS show to pull, because they've got a challenge. They've got to pull all those people from TNT and make sure they're switching over to TBS to watch. And like a match like that, the babyface Hangman against a heel Cody would be a great way to do that.
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's so many ships in the sea that that are on course, or in barges that are on course that are kind of hard to turn. And Tony has, you know, a lot of things planned out, but if that is what he's planning, I think it sounds good. If it's not what he's planning, but he can make it happen, that's good. I will say I'm not particularly concerned about the move from TNT to TBS. That's a parallel move. Any cable system that carries TBS carries TNT and vice versa.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, of course.
Like Fox and FS1 is a double drop. You're dropping to cable and you're dropping to a low-end cable network. If it was, Fox to USA Network, the ratings would hold up better. FS1 just isn't a major cable network. Lots of companies don't carry them, and a lot of people don't even know they have it. I think it's more akin to when, WCW was on TBS for years, and then they went on to TNT, and after the first Nitro, I tell the story all the time, Kevin Sullivan, who booked that first Nitro, told me at the bar afterwards, because they were here in Bloomington at the Mall of America, he's like, it's going to take them, like, I don't know what he said, 4 to 8 months for people to find us. He's doing what any good promoter does, which is set the bar low, so you exceed it. It was ridiculous. And, of course, they won. They did great ratings, and instantly, people who knew about TBS were able to find them. So I think the AW audience follows them. I'm not worried about that at all. So my point in that is don't blow up your booking plans to hotshot something for a show that's probably going to draw within 5% of what you drew the week before, what the previous 4-week average was, not accounting for holidays. I think they're going to be just fine. Eric, your thoughts on that?
Well, Cody has said he will never turn heel and he will never challenge for the AEW World title again. So
that's a good point.
I'm going to take him at his word, but the good news is for Paige, if you're trying to establish him as a new face champion, he's certainly going to get cheered against Cody.
There you go. I mean, Cody doesn't need to, quote, turn heel to be matched against baby faces and booed. So, Cody, you don't have to turn heel, but just understand your opponent's going to be very popular for the next couple of years. And we're going to pair you with Brandy on TV. We think that's a great idea. And you can actually coach her as she tries to, challenge for the women's title, one or the other. We're on your side, Cody.
Yes.
Damn those guys.
And last thing, I'll let you move on to Javier. I was just really curious. Had you gotten the 3-day, the 3-plus ratings for last weekend yet? Because I was figuring that there'd be a lot of DVR action. I was just really curious.
No, because I get the updated numbers on the previous week's show when I get the following week's show.
Oh, okay.
And I won't get that till Monday because Rampage was Friday.
Right.
And that's just where my guy does the tally. So, yeah, I should have that data on Monday. That'll be interesting, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's just it could be an even bigger win for Rampage. I was just curious. I'm an old television guy, so I know ratings.
Yeah.
And just to finish off with a quick rant, I started in television business in 1980. People were complaining about the ratings in 1980. They were complaining about the ratings in 1990. They were complaining about the ratings in 2000, in 2010, in 2020. Nielsen and Arbitron, way back when, do a great job of a statistical sample. They work so hard to get their original person, who the household that they their sampling company picks. It is an estimate. They call them the rating estimates. The only way to get a better number is to do a census, which they can't. They could do, but legally there's all sorts of problems. And whatever people say, billions and billions of advertising money, syndication money, and deciding whether a show gets another season, all that has been based on the Nielsen ratings for 65 years. And for people to say, oh, it's all different now, it's not, they're always improving, and you just got to go with it. It's whatever it is. It's just what you said. The ratios are all still there, and it's really good numbers. They really do a good job. And with that, I will let you go.
And thanks. And I'll also say that that when you see a TV network saying Nielsen isn't worth paying attention to anymore, check the last 6 months of their ratings, because probably they put on programming that nobody wanted to watch. And now they're doing what wrestling promoters have done over the years when they were putting out a product nobody wanted to watch, which is say, I don't believe those numbers. But you're great to put some historical perspective on it. But yeah, when you see headline stories, you know, this network is not paying attention to Nielsen anymore. It's like, right, because nobody's watching them anymore. And the only way they can keep their job is if they throw Nielsen under the bus. But you don't hear that from other networks that are doing well.
And they're also probably in contract negotiations.
Exactly. All right. Thanks, Nick.
All right. Good night. Have a good weekend. Right.
Yep. You too. All right, we'll wrap here with Javier. Javier, seems like it's been a while since you've been wrapped up the show with our late roundtable here. How you doing?
Hey, Wade, how's it going? How's it going, Eric?
Hey, you must be tired. All that G1, and they were in Miami for two shows last week.
Yeah, well, and I was on the Rampage post show yesterday with Tyler Sage.
Yes.
And I mentioned it that it feels like last weekend was like a year ago for me. It just feels like, because when I was, because I told him, like, man, I went about to get on, and I'm like, I don't remember anything, because this feels like it was several weeks ago with all the stuff that was going on.
I feel that way.
I feel that way
constantly.
I can imagine, Wade. I am glad to know that I'm apparently number 13 on your list, Wade.
Yes. You were great. Well, because I felt bad, I try to spread co-hosts out 3 weeks. And then for a whole bunch of reasons that I won't get into, I ended up not with someone locked in, but possible, but not locked in, and had to wait. And then, I'm like, well, you're on last night, and it's not a Wade Keller show, but it still counts. And so I was like, yeah, I guess I'll bring Eric on, even though it should be another week before I even invite him.
Yeah, I'm still waiting for the AEW. I haven't done AEW yet.
You would have been your chance.
I
didn't say yes to Tyler.
I got a lot of Raws. Sometimes I think it's just punishment. We've talked a lot about Cody, but because of the Rampage, I was really interested in finding out his reaction today. Because, what reaction he would have gotten today because of the weirdness of his reaction on Miami. Because what the on-site correspondent said about vitriol, that's what it felt like when they played the video of him getting slapped by all the trainees. That's what it felt like. Because when they were playing that video, people were, cheering when he would get slapped. And people were saying, it felt like they were angry at him. But then, Hidden had mentioned that there were sound sweetening. It wasn't. The reactions that you heard on TV were, the reaction caught, for the most part, the reactions caught. Obviously, some stuff doesn't travel well. But yeah, because when the moment happened on the Rampage show and the lights went off, we basically seen it, all at once, one after the other. And Andrade had been talking about you know, that he's going to have friends over, and, you know, which was the, you know, a lucha group that's going to wrestle, you know, Penta and Rey Fénix. What'd you call it? Huh?
I'm just making fun of Excalibur for saying Fénix to try to correct us. Fénix.
I used to say Fénix también, but, you know, I don't know why.
Yeah.
I went the, yeah, whatever. the Ranas came out and it turned out to be FTR. But then since it's the same night and the lights went out at the end of the match, we're thinking that, oh, well, because the friends that he's talking about, you know, there was a lot of people in the audience thought that, you know, we were expecting like Rouge and Dragon Lee maybe showing up when the lights came back on. But then when, you know, Andrade came out, you know, people were, you know, kind of cheering, but they were also like, okay, whose side is he on? And then when he missed it, Pac, everybody booed. So it's not that people want to chant.
Yeah.
I don't think people necessarily want to cheer Malakai Black. You know, it's just that he's so cool. They want to cheer whoever's the coolest guy. But when they're equally cool, then they'll go with who's the baby face and who's the heel. Because at that moment, he was getting booed against Pac. Then Arn Anderson came out, and when Arn Anderson came out, you, just like on tonight's show, you heard get the Glock. Was that the chant? Something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that chant. Huh? Yeah. So there was
that
chant, and then he did the finger. Yeah. So and then the people started, and when he did the finger gun, the people started going nuts, and then that's when Cody hit the roads, and then people were going nuts for Cody. When the thing went off the air and they started playing Cody's music, people were singing along like it were Judas to Cody's music. So it was like such a babyface reaction for him. And then I'm like, well, I wonder if this is going to like carry over today. And apparently, according to the on-site correspondence, it did not. It really did not. Although when Pac came out, when Andrade came out, and then, you know, there was kind of like boos, and when Pac came out, there was the cheer. So I think, like, Pac might be the one that's most over in this whole thing as the babyface.
That's interesting. What do you think, Eric, on that?
I think Malakai Black is the most over babyface out of all four of those guys. So, maybe Pac is second, and Cody is third, and Andrade's a heel like he should be.
Yeah, because when he missed it, Pac, he got booed heavy. Malakai did, and then when they came out, and you know, and this was a Cody special, you know, overbooked, you know, craziness. You know, when it looked like Andrade was coming out to help Malakai, there were boos at that point. So that's why I'm wondering, you know, and then, you know, it's just weird. I don't know what to make out of it. Cause I think people like want to boo Cody, but then when they're confronted with something else, they kind of like, I don't know. It's just, I want to see what happens next week in whatever town they're in next week. If, you know, Black and
Austin
and Cody are involved. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I did not get to go to the Orlando one because I had work stuff. So if not, I would have been there.
That sounds like
not
you.
Boston,
it,
though. That's,
you don't
that's
think you missed out. I don't think you missed out on history. I mean, you know, I don't think you should feel bad.
Yeah.
Not that it was a bad show. Just you know, you saw enough, and it's not like I missed the best one.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting. Again, another thing the correspondents made, because that was what was like that bugged me about the whole Miami thing, was the fact that I hadn't, you know, I was still trying to research whether there was going to be a Rampage taping on that Saturday. And, like, it wasn't clear that they were going to be taping Rampage after Dynamite. So it wasn't, like, until, like, the show started and they mentioned it. And I'm like, okay, so they are. And then, you know, so I'm not surprised, you know, I'm surprised that then it was, like, the reverse that the correspondents had today that you know, they were saying that, you know, they were expecting Rampage and they realized they're not going to get a Rampage. I think they kind of should be clear about that, you know, maybe like even on the ticket, you know,
I mean, yeah, or just have a website that actually is navigable and informative and, you know, logical, and just be like, here's what to expect. And, you know, let people know, you know, here's when we're going to start and here's how long you can expect to be here. I mean, I don't know. I don't know how many clicks they'd get on those links, but it'd be nice to have that information just kind of put out there.
I mean, that was our main issue because we were trying to figure out how much to pay for parking.
Oh, that's a good point.
You know, because
because the
meters jumped from like, you know, you're going to be there for 3 hours, and then it jumps to like 12 hours, like three times the amount of money.
Oh, wow.
So
yep,
it was like, you know, so I'm like, you know, if they're going to go too long, then we're going to be, you know, we're going to have to go out and put more money in the meter.
All right, Javier, we're way past 2 hours, and you held on for so long, so I don't want to rush you too much, but kind of hit the most pertinent point or two so Eric can also, you know, get on with his life.
Well, I love Miro's new God's Forsaken champion. That works really well for me. I do think that he's going to because I mean, what I took from that promo was the fact that he's basically stating that he's just going to beat up a bunch of people, working his way to, you know, number one. And I do think that the idea isn't for the TNT title, because I think the idea is to eventually face for the. Do they call it world title? Yeah, world title. Which I think should make Eric happy, which is that means that Hangman Page probably wins.
Woo!
You're talking Eric language.
So that was that, and I think that's pretty much it. And this show really did feel packed. I know it wasn't like a very impactful show, but there came a point where I looked at the time, and because it felt like, oh, you know, show must be coming to an end, not like the WWE because it's boring and it feels like it's taking forever, but because they had covered so much ground with like everything that they did, that I was like, wow, you know, they packed a lot into that first hour. I mean, I almost think it might be too much because like Punk came out and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. We haven't seen Punk yet. So is it possible they might be doing too much?
It's been possible they've been doing too much for a long time, you know, but it also is what they intentionally are doing. You know, I mean, for AEW to not densely pack the show rapid fire in a way that makes it difficult to remember everything that happened, that's their brand. You know, that's intentional. That is a feature, not a flaw, to counter program, you know, to counter program what WWE does in a way, and to be different than them. And I think it's just, you know, Tony's natural inclination is go, go, go. You know, and there was a time when it was, you know, point the camera at the ring and let the wrestlers wrestle. And now there's, you know, a lot more stuff coming in and out of breaks and more pre-taped stuff, more elbow grease, more pizzazz, more, you know, post-produced stuff. And I like that, but there's definitely times where I'm like, you know, at the end of the show, I wish I had a little bit more of an idea of the main thing that I was supposed to take from it. You know, I go back to that thing I heard Kevin Dunn, you know, said, you know, we want after every WWE TV show, we want people thinking about two and a half things. You know, there's this two main things we got across and that other little thing. Everything else was just there to fill time, you know, or build to the future, you know, and lay the groundwork for something. But with AEW, it's never two and a half things. It's like, you know, 10 or 20 little things, and everyone's top items are going to be different than the next person's. You know, Eric, what do you think about that? It's a big picture topic. But
yeah, I think the groove AEW has gotten into, I mean, when they started, they would throw matches out there cold. And I always felt like a little off put by that, because it's like, well, there's no build up to this. Why should I have any investment in the two guys who are in the ring, or the two tag teams in the ring? These days, pretty much every segment on AEW is either setting up a match for TV the next week for Rampage or Dynamite, or it's setting up furthering a feud for heading into the pay-per-view. So I think that's really good. Everything has a purpose, right? If they were just doing random stuff,
or
like
the tournament match, which feels more random.
I think that's a plus. My other takeaway that I don't think I've talked about tonight is tonight was sort of a couple of times where we had baby faces being dumb. The first one was Jungle Boy, who he knew Christian was taken out by the Elite a couple weeks ago. In actuality, is wrestling pay-per-view right now, tonight. So Jungle Boy goes out there and calls out the Elite, and, you know, he doesn't have any backup. And so, you know, that the WWE, the obvious, one of the obvious complaints is always the baby faces are dumb and they don't have any friends. And Jungle Boy put himself in that position tonight. Plus the psychology was a little bit messed up. He was doing a heel thing to the hapless Brandon Cutler. He was using him as bait, but still a little bit weird psychology. And the other thing is Sting did the same thing, right? He comes out there knowing Darby Allin isn't around, and he gets beat up by the heels and he has no backup. I thought, given that what we saw on Tony Khan's dance card, that there was going to be a Punk Wardlow match at the pay-per-view potentially, that I kept waiting for Punk's music to hit right then and there, and then to set up Wardlow versus Punk, right, for the pay-per-view, but it didn't happen. Instead, we got Punk making the save to set up a match with the oh-so-exciting Bobby Fish. And I think about the best thing I can say about that, my excitement level, is Bobby Fish has clearly hit the hair dye and beard dye aisle at his local drugstore, and CM Punk still has not.
Yes. I mean, I think you could do Wardlow and Punk and have it be a match where Punk wins because MJF screws things up for Wardlow, and that's the impetus for the breakup. But also, Wardlow looks good against Punk. Punk looks good against Wardlow, and they – you know, and then you do, you know, Wardlow and Punk together to help elevate Wardlow to a new level as a tag team against MJF and one of his remaining thugs. You know, just to play out a possible scenario there. I think there's still a way to get there. They took the Wardlow-MJF tension from Wardlow giving him a dirty look and then seeming to completely forgive him to now actually verbally confronting him and getting a BS explanation from MJF and then grumbling about that. So progress.
It would have made sense. It makes sense, though, for Punk to have made the save for Sting, because Punk, when he first came in, obviously he was with against Darby and Sting, and then they were sort of loosely allied there. So there's an easy path to get there, and I imagine we're going to see it in the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, and there's a lot of things going on at once, and not every wrestler has to be just like in WWE focused on only one other wrestler for 3 months at a time. And, you know, there's logic to that, but it's also nice when you don't exactly know that the one wrestler Punk's going to be wrestling for the next 3 months, you know, that maybe there's going to be a few other people he goes through and a Rampage match here and this there. So, but yeah, the fascination with Bobby Fish at this moment is a bit of a surprise to me. You know, he's a good hand, but I don't know.
I mean, he's in the jobber to the stars position. He's sort of like what Daniel Garcia was for August and part of September. Now it's Bobby Fish in that role.
Yeah, but I don't know. I mean, I'm not like super down on Fish. I'm just like, really? Like, it's not that they're pushing him. It's just he's getting TV time and they have this deep roster. And I don't know. I'd have him as sort of the either do more with him or he's part of, you know, a significant faction. And I'm not advocating for that, but that's better than just treating him like people are interested in him on his own. And I just, he's good. I'm not like, but I just don't, I think they're giving him more time and attention than just about even the biggest Bobby Fish fan would have anticipated he'd get here in AEW. Javier, anything else you want to close with?
I totally agree with you on that, Wade. I just have a soft spot for Bobby Fish. So I'm like, just go with it, man. Go with it for as long as it lasts.
Sure.
But yeah. So, looking forward to the hotline, because I want to hear the gossip on the whole Charlotte and Becky thing. So,
yes, one of the reasons we got to wrap up, so I still have energy to do a decent job with it.
Yeah, I'm like, hey, can I stay on and hear you in the background? No, just kidding.
No.
talk to you later. Have a good
thanks, Javier. Appreciate it. Yep, you too. All right, let's see. All right, we got a long email. I'm not going to read it. I'll save it for another show because we ran so long here. I did have this queued up because it covers some other territory. But, Eric, we will wrap up there. Thank you so much. You are always my first choice, even if you're not the first person that I reach out to.
I think I appreciate that.
No, this was fun. This was a good show, lots of good calls, on-site correspondent. We did get some good emails, and one in particular here I'm not going to get to, but I'm giving a shout-out to Ed for his thoughtful email. I'll find a way to get to it one way or the other another time. Eric, yeah, thanks. We got lots of good stuff in, and I appreciate your calling an audible here on the weekend to be with me here on this.
Thank you. Take care.
Yep, you too.